Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest.
I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, Friday night, Saturday morning here in this part of the good old USA. This program covered all the way around the world in all 24 time zones. So, yo, hello there. Friday night, Saturday morning with... boy, a couple of real changes this Friday night, Saturday morning. So it was a short week for me. We're going to do a couple of things. Number one, we're going to talk to the amazing Preskin here in a moment. He's done an amazing thing, living up to name, I guess, huh? And he said that there's going to be, in May or June, an IE right now, or the foreseeable future, there's going to be a gigantic... one of the biggest UFO sightings in all of history, virtually right over my head, here in Nevada. And if it doesn't happen, why, he's donating $50,000 to an as of yet unnamed charity. Wonder if I'd qualify as a charity. Probably not, huh? So we're going to talk with Preskin then in the second hour. We have booked a fellow who will use a first name only, and I don't even know if it's his first name, and he breaks people out of jail. He goes around the world if somebody's in jail in a foreign country, you hire this guy and he goes and busts people out. This is going to be a different kind of interview too. He just got out. It's my understanding a few minutes before airtime, we had been trying to reach him without luck, you know, not getting an answer, and apparently he just got out of jail, so I can't tell you where the next couple of hours are going beyond about that. Preskin is a really interesting guy. For over four decades now, he's dramatized the unique facets of the human mind, including his own. And all of this began at childhood for him. And I think most of you, I really know about the amazing Preskin, the amazing prediction, backed up with $50,000. That's a lot of money, isn't it? So in a moment, having heard, I think you all heard about Preskin's amazing prediction, we'll talk to Preskin about it and find out how this came to be and why he decided to put up money and all that kind of stuff. So stay right there.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night, but you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
Well, okay, as I said, I think you just know who the amazing Preskin is. He's an amazing guy. We'll let him tell you more about himself, but the main thing that's got him here right now is this incredible prediction. Preskin, welcome to the show.
Well, not good to talk to you, Art. You know, everywhere I go, and I mean this quite sincerely, people ask me, you know, have I spoken to you lately? Have we talked? And I'm working here in Vegas at the Silverton, actually for three more weeks now. This is four more weeks, this week and three more. And
wait a minute, let me interrupt for just one second. So in other words, Preskin, you're going to be here through the majority of the prediction period.
Yeah, and the irony of it is that, as a matter of fact, what I was saying, by the way, is that after the show tonight at the Silverton, people, I was doing autographs saying, we're leaving, we're hurrying, to get to a radio at 10 o'clock. Actually, when I made this prediction in March, I wasn't scheduled to be here. I didn't even know I was going to be. It wasn't part of any itinerary. I was touring Canada, and I was in Ontario, and it's a beautiful country if you've been there, and different concert each night, and these were two and a half hour performances, and a story broke, which you may have discussed, but it was a very fascinating news piece. Some researchers had come to the conclusion that in the past year in Canada, this is as of last March, that there were 42% increase in sightings of UFOs in the country.
That was in Canada. Yeah, I was all over that story.
Yeah, and it was interesting. And the press came to me. The reason they had come is that a year and a half ago, the Learning Channel, you know, the cable channel here in the States, did 1 week of documentary, 1 hour each week night on UFOs, and they had me as one of the consultants for the first and second night to kind of comment on what my thoughts were regarding the abduction stories, and they just wanted a different viewpoint and
sightings. Wait a minute, what did you say? What did you tell them? They asked your viewpoint on abduction. What did you say?
Well, in the abduction incident, and I have felt that I've never been convinced of abductions. I know that the people are sincere, but I felt that most abductions were working best if it were a few guys fishing in a swamp that had been drinking heavily. Now, don't misunderstand me. I know there are some people who are seriously convinced they've been abducted, and just as there's some people who have been seriously convinced that they are multiple personalities. And the pattern, personality pattern, seems to be the same, that the memories seem to be dredged up, that they didn't seem to be aware of for a long, long time, which interests me because while we are under the influence, the opinion in the Western world, that under some highly specialized techniques such as hypnosis, people can be made to recall repressed memories. Regarding hypnosis, that's a
Well, the controversy is that such ideas can be injected as well.
Yeah, so. But also the interesting thing is that if you really get to know individuals who've had traumatic experience, such as servicemen, they really don't forget the experiences. It's very difficult to forget something you don't want to think about. Try not to think of the word octopus. And when they're traumatic, what is found, and my background's in psychology, and I've known psychologists through the years, is that they don't talk about it. They just push it away.
Preskin, do you know Travis Walton?
I know about Travis Walton, but I don't know.
You know about Travis? I interviewed extensively. I really interviewed him for a long time, and his boss. This is a really well-documented story. They've done lie detectors. Oh, they've really been down the road. I'm convinced that was a real abduction.
Yeah. I respect your thoughts, but by the way, listen, I have in my family over a dozen people in law enforcement. I have worked on 84 crime cases through the years. I have great respect for law enforcement, but I don't think the lie detector can tell if a person is telling the truth or not. If a person is morally strong or has great fear, they can use the lie detector as a focal point to break them in some way because of the fear of it. And I know polygraphics.
Can you fool a lie detector?
Yes. A lot of people can. Lots and lots and lots of people can.
And describe to me how you do that.
Well, you have to have a mindset. You have to rehearse certain stress reactions to innocuous things as well as things that you're concerned.
Do you use biofeedback
in
practice?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can teach. Now, I'm not saying everybody, but the lie detector, as we know, is a machine. It's the interpretation of the lie detector. One of my close friends for years, Tom McFadden, who was a very fine polygraph expert in the New Jersey, unfortunately he's passed on, he used to tell me most of the confessions they got with the polygraph was before they plugged it in. The machine is ominously scary. And if you believe it works, it tends to have much more effectiveness than if you kind of have yourself disinterested. Now, I'm not saying that this proves or disproves. I believe many people believe they were abducted. I believe they absolutely believe. And I am no authority on abductions. I just had to place it from my viewpoint. But they came to me in Canada because they were aware of the first two programs and so forth, and they asked me, and I found it interesting, as you've talked about the 42% and so forth, and I came to make a statement, and that was simply this. I felt very, very strongly that the next great sightings of UFOs. And when I say sightings, Art, I don't mean a group of guys, as I said, fishing or a few people partying in some corner of a remote forest. But I mean, when I say sightings, I mean scores of people, not 10, 15. I mean scores of people.
You're talking about something the magnitude of the Phoenix Lights.
Yeah, and yes. And I don't, and I think it will take place. Now, they've asked me, I've 3 hours ago been interviewed by people, reporters in Ireland and England are saying, well, we got the map in front of us, can you pinpoint Jesus? I'm not, forgive me, I didn't mean to put it that way, but I'm not, I don't have contact with any.
Okay,
any,
just to get it straight, it was Nevada, right?
Yeah, it's going to be on the desert in Nevada, outside the outskirts of Las Vegas. And I think that the amount of UFOs, it's not going to be some star shower, you know, misinterpreted as all kinds of lights. I think we'll only number 3 or 4, but it will be either this, and I said this in March, and there were full stories that it'll be in March or June, but I did something further.
You said May or June.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's all right.
I said it in March, but I'm glad you're tracking me. After a show, sometimes I get a little bit disoriented, but it'll be in May or June, and as I said, in March. But when Regis and some of the shows started discussing it 3 weeks ago, I thought I have to follow through further what I promised I said last March, that when I came back to the States, I would further formalize my position. And I went on the Fox News Network. I've known Roger Ailes, who's the head of Fox, for many years, since he, you know, was with Mike Douglas, and then he went to Nixon, worked for Nixon, and then he worked for Reagan, and then became Bush's campaign manager the first election. The second was a disaster for Bush. Roger left and said he'd had it with politics. He went back to head a network. I went to them 2 weeks ago Monday morning and handed them a letter in my own handwriting that further said, as I promised, if I fail, that I would turn over $50,000 to them, to the news network staff, for them to distribute to whatever charities they see fit. Hmm. The reason I made, Art, the reason I made is...
Stop for a second.
I'm sorry.
Let's go back to why you did this in the first place. I would be interested to know how this came to you.
I'm really not into... for many years, I just turned against the ideas of making predictions. There's a whole story about this.
Right, but you just did so. You just did so. Let's get this out of the way. How did this come to you?
I made a clear, concise conclusion after thinking about it for literally a day and a half. And I turned to my road manager, and he said, "You're out of your mind. Why are you saying this?" I said, I'm absolutely certain this is going to take place, but I'm also certain, and I hope I'm here. I'm going home every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday because of work in the East Coast. I hope I'm here the day will happen, because one way or the other, I'm going to hold a press conference the next day and explain a couple of things, the further real reasons behind this, and why I feel in the climate of the world today since 9/11 that this takes on remarkably more serious significance than just some report that's going to be talked about for the next century.
Okay, stop again. You still haven't answered my question. Exactly in what manner did this come to you? Did this come to you over you said a period of time? Did you just begin to form a conclusion? Did you see something?
It didn't happen immediately. I did not see anything. I didn't get any visions, no.
Okay.
It came over a series of... Now, I have through the years studied the history of sightings. You know, Art, the only thing we ever really learn from history, as I'm sure you agree, is that we never learn from history.
Right.
And history does tend to repeat itself if only we would study it. If we would study it regarding wars, if we would study it regarding famines, if we would study it regarding changes of society, it
repeats itself.
It will, it will continue to. And we, folks listening, and there's only one thing I'm going to say.
But you know, just saying history repeats itself isn't enough to put up $50,000.
No. The further reasons are that I really have to hold reserved until after this transpires, because I would like to have you amongst the first to communicate the factors behind this. There's far more to this than just the sightings. Far more to this than just the sightings, and I I'm not interested.
More, please. There is more to this than the sightings. Now,
and then
you say something about not wanting to create panic. All right, now that carries with it the weight of contact. Yes?
No.
No, not contact? No.
I've never, and by the way, before people start misinterpreting me, I, as I've said every night, not only here at the Silverton, but in concerts around the country since March, I am long convinced that there is intelligence beyond this earth here. And God forbid, Art, we're the only intelligence. God, heaven forbid, that we're the only intelligence on earth. I just can't conceive. Furthermore, I've spent too much time. It will be in about 3 months, it has been estimated by the airline people, that I will have flown 3 million miles, which is more than any commercial pilot in this country or Canada.
Really?
I spent an awful lot of time over those 3 million miles now. I don't want to get anybody...
Do you really like flying that much? I've come to hate it. I mean, 15 hours to the Orient, for example. 15-hour plane flights really suck.
I just came back from New Zealand. That was 28 hours.
But
can I say something in fairness to the airline industry?
Oh, yes.
I've got to say...
You're alive.
The airlines are in great trouble today.
Yes, I know.
Flights are filled because there's not as many flights. And folks listening in, I don't care what anybody says, this is the safest time to fly. You can't go on a plane with a pair of tweezers. I'm sick and tired of news broadcasts is sensationalizing the exceptions. There's always exceptions in life. This is a wonderful... I will tell you, and I said this on CNN New Year's Day, why 4 airlines will go out of business, and already 2 have in this... Well, American was brought in by TWA, and a Canadian company's already gone. Sadly enough, it's not going to be the vacationers. It's going to be the businessman who flies from Newark to Pittsburgh every day and flies home. He cannot every day go through the 2-hour security before the flight and the 2-hour coming home every day. So like the replacement of the saddle with the car, the replacement of airlines will be video conferencing in offices. It's very sad because this is one of the great industries of our history, airline industry, but this is going to be the price.
I feel sorry for the airlines, Kreskin, and I feel sorry for the post office, too.
Yes, oh, yes.
The poor postal employees are suffering because of the damned attack. And these are big things. I mean, this September 11th thing, the repercussions of it for our whole economy, for our whole country, it cannot be underestimated.
I never was into the... Everybody knows me as a thought reader, as a mentalist. If they see me, like tonight here at the Silverton, one lady stood up in the audience. I told her the names of her 3 cats and an address she'd had 10 years ago, which she was thinking about, because if she asked me, where am I going to go next year, and didn't know, I couldn't answer. But 9 years ago, CNN News Network came to me and said, come on New Year's Day and talk about the future. I said, I'm not into this business. I'm really not into this. They said, Kreskin, we got astrologers on, we got all this business. But I said, they make dozens of predictions. You remember what comes true, what doesn't. They said, well, you travel a lot. Come on. Well, let me tell you. I came on. And we had a little bit of fun. We started getting calls everywhere. I said, oh, my God, people are serious about this. Let me next year reflect upon this. And I got more and more serious. And 1 year I took a shot at the Academy Awards, and it was the day before, and I handed the producer on the air. I said, this is the list of the top 12. We won't announce it. Put it in a box after you read it, and tomorrow we'll open it. And I was correct. They called me the next year. I said, never again. I spent 30 hours preparing that list, 30 hours. I studied the reviews of every single writer in the world I could find and found certain of them were good when they anticipated the best script, but they weren't good at the movie, and on and on. And so most predictions are like a weatherman. You take what exists, because nothing in the future is totally excluded from today. It's part of a continuation.
Well, I don't see the weather guys on a local channel laying $50,000 on their prediction.
I've had better success. All right, I've had better success than they have. So what I have to tell you, three years ago, I went on. Boy, did the press in New York scathe me. I said, and you gotta realize, at the moment I said this on this January 1st, it wasn't even a rumor. I said, Hillary Clinton is going to run for office in the United States Senate in New York, and she's going to win. Well, at that moment, it wasn't a rumor. Then she thought she'd run, and they said no. And then she ran, and they thought it was going to be a joke, and she won. The second thing I said that day, and these are all recorded.
Oh, yes.
I said, Bill Gates of Microsoft. There was a lot of controversy, remember, with the government.
And oh, yes.
I said in 11 days, he would step down. Art, this is, as an entertainer, and a series, that's one of my cherished moments. I was traveling 12 days later, and CNN, of course, is international with their news. They interrupted one of their news pieces and said, we want to announce just at this moment, Mr. Bill Gates has said to step down. Oh, thank you, Kreskin. I've never been thanked for a headline story in my life. So on and on it went, and then...
Hold on, Kreskin.
Sorry.
And then we'll have to wait until after the break here at the bottom of the hour. My guest is... the amazing Kreskin, who's made a prediction about the skies above my head from the desert, the high desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Friday night, Saturday morning underway. These are some of the actual words Kreskin used. Quote, I am absolutely convinced that in May or June of this year, the largest sighting to date will take place in the Nevada desert, probably the largest sighting in the past century. Continuing the quote, I'm so convinced of the accuracy of my prediction that I'm putting up $50,000 to back my claim. We've got Kreskin here in a minute. We're going to push harder.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
Once again, the amazing Kreskin. Now, it's very important, Kreskin, that I really try hard to pin you down here. You said something about there was more to the sighting than you had told, and that you didn't want to create panic. If I don't push you on this, I got to push on this, so.
Well, you can put, and but.
You give me something.
I can't really, and then I'm being honest.
You can give
about
me
it,
a little something.
I think, well, first of all, since, you know, the world is not the same since 9/11, and,
still, just whisper something in my ear.
It's not the same since, and events that happen, that could have worldwide attention, could, take on far greater meaning or significance that obviously than if something like this happened in a time of peace. I don't, and yet I don't mean, I don't have any fear. I don't feel that there's the presentment of an attack or what have you, but that's all I can say, right? Because listen, it's far be it for me. I'm not reading the thoughts of aliens.
Would it be fair to say then, something that will be of the magnitude that will attract the attention of the entire world?
Oh, I think to a degree, yes, it will. I think, well, not the entire world, though people will turn up, but the interpretation of it, of course, we look at all the vast literature on UFOs. If you look at the various writers, from science writers to science fiction writers.
I don't suppose you can tell me whether this is going to happen when I'm on the air, can you?
No. I can't. You know, or please, if I'm correct in May or June, can I be given some credit?
If you're correct on this, you're going to get credit beyond all reason. Well, I mean, it's just your credibility will go through.
Can I say something? There's once before. This is the, you know, with things as serious as they are now, we have to look. My hero in the last century was a man by the name of Winston Churchill, whom I never knew, but my God, the more you study him, I mean, the darkest days.
An amazing man, yes.
Yes, he was. And you talk to people, if anyone ever walks near this state that worked with him, you got to entice them in some way. It's incredible. In the darkest days.
In some ways, Kreskin, it always happens. In the darkest days for America, when we need leadership the most, we seem to get it. And that's just the way it seemed to work. I mean, somebody rises to the occasion.
Someone told me, and I've worked in England a great deal, and someone who had worked with him and traveled with him, I could go on for 2 hours with stories about it. But anyway, they said one night, and you remember we have studied history in the early 40s, in 1941, there were bombs falling every night. I mean, every night. And his war officers said to him, the Prime Minister, it's too dangerous. We got to close the cinema. We got to close the nightclubs and everything. He jumped up, rammed his fist, and it was broke his hand. Rammed the table and with language I won't say, said, "Damn it! What do you think we're fighting for? Life is going to go on. We must never cower to anything. Fear is the most paralyzing thing of all." And but I got to tell you something on the lighter side. There was one other time.
Do you think this will be perceived as a very fearful event?
No.
Well, you use the word panic.
Well, that's another thing. Anything.
They're pretty closely connected.
Yes.
Fear, panic.
And you and I both know that we tend to either attack or fear something we don't understand. Isn't
absolutely.
It an interesting trait?
Absolutely.
Gosh, God forbid if five angels sent by God landed on Earth, and it wasn't simply the day the Earth stood still, you know as well as I do, a fair amount of population would attack them. What has always fascinated me, and I have been privy to people in the intelligence field, as I suspect you have as well, is that during the Second World War, and I know a man who was one of the key heads of it, one of the great fears in the Second World War, and this fascinates me, when there was beginning to become awareness of whether they call them UFOs or not, possibly other sources of intelligence in the universe revealing itself. Listen to this, Art. One of the great fears, and it was discussed, I am told, on hundreds of occasions in meetings in the Pentagon, would modern society, or how would they handle something if they became absolutely certain that another source of intelligence was higher, much higher than yours and I?
The Brookings Institution, Kreskin, did that study.
Yes,
you know they did that
right.
study. They were commissioned to do the study,
yes,
and the answers were incredible.
And speculate, we may say, well, we'll accept it easily. I am not so sure.
Oh, I'm not either.
But I got on the other side of the coin a couple of years ago, and I say this now lightly, but it was a nightmare in my life. I will never, never do this again. I decided to take a shot at the elections, and of course it was President Bush, and it was Gore and Bush, and they were running for office, and I went on a daytime show, controversial, but he's been very, very good to me, and that's Howard Stern, and I went on with a statement, and I didn't reveal it. We put it in a safe on the air with a check for a substantial amount of money if I failed. Now, Stern, for rightly said, oh, Kreskin, that's only a 50-50 shot. And I said, well, that's why I'm putting the money behind it. Now, let me tell you the background. What nobody knew was the detective Otto, who came on with me. I did not know. He was from a city in New Jersey. He had quietly read the prediction. He knew it. So the idea this was some magical trick, or as Stern and I agreed to play with it, said, well, maybe there's two compartments in the safe and all this jazz. Furthermore, I had sent copies of the prediction to five people, two writers, a very famous psychiatrist, the president, one of the president of Gannett newspaper, all were who told, don't open it until the day. We were waiting, and Art, forgive me, but I do have fun. We were waiting for some skeptics to come out of the rafter and say, well, this is some gimmick, because I could not sue them for money, but they would have been in trouble. Now, New Year, election eve, I come back from a show in Pennsylvania. It was a corporate affair, and I'm, needless to say, glued to the TV set. And if you remember that evening, it finally was decided that President Bush had won. I called 32 or 22 people. I said, oh, don't worry. My attorney, who said, you're insane putting this money at my account. I said, it's safe. Then, Art, I went through 38 of the most harrowing days of my life.
We all did.
But
it
had
seemed like the most harrowing thing of the time.
Finally, what a cape. By the way, during that October, I was performing three shows a night at Busch Gardens, and I talked to hundreds and hundreds of people from Florida, and I'm still convinced that had the count been more accurate and thorough, that I would have been wrong, and that Gore would have won. Well, that's only history now. It's gone. So finally, when it was all over, and Stern opened the safe, and I had predicted Bush, but I also said, with the disclaimer that this does not involve the money, I also said that Bush would carry 31 states, and if I was wrong, it would be by one, and he carried 30 states. But Art, hear this. Never again will I get involved in a political thing like this.
Why?
Enough, because
why?
Look at the nightmare of 38 days. No more.
Yeah. Well, that was of course, that's now part of history. It was an amazing time that America came through actually very well, as you look back.
Yes, that was the interesting thing. Unlike other countries of the world who would have handled this, if we look at history, with riots and everything else.
Absolutely.
Far different. But you know what was interesting about it is it was so remarkably close that if it were done in the form of a movie, it would have seemed to be rather silly and non-convincing, in the same way that a year ago New Year's Day on January 1st of the 8 or 9 predictions I made on CNN, I said that my favorite team, the Yankees, I said, I hope Mayor Giuliani, and of course he was mayor at that time, and today mayor of the world, but I said, I hope Mayor Giuliani is upset, but it's my favorite team, but they're not going to win the World Series this year. And I was on ESPN a few months ago because they kept saying, I didn't know this, they quoting me, if you looked at the last World Series, it was like a movie melodrama. It was so darn close.
Absolutely incredible.
That there might be, but the Yankees...
Everything's incredible these days.
So this year, I have to say this with a kind of quiet satisfaction, and because the night before 9/11, I was performing, ironically enough, not many minutes away from the Twin Towers for Continental, and at that time they were soaring in success and what have you. And then 5 days later, to walk towards the site, and then Regis coming towards me in the other direction, both white as a sheet. I will not even talk about it. I cannot discuss it. It's one of the harrowing moments of my life. But to see how the world has changed, and I hope one thing will take place.
Events are accelerating.
They're accelerating. That's the thing. We're not as easily able to stop the world, breathe the trees and the leaves, and reflect. And this scares me. The other thing, Art...
It's really interesting to observe, though, Kreskin. I've been watching it and noting it now for some years, and it's really interesting to watch it unfold.
It is
in a morbid kind of way.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. You said something very. By the way, I got a kick out of this. I said one of the other things I said on New Year's Day, and I talked about lighter things. I said, Mr. Mayor, with his politically incorrect, will go off the air in 6 months, and I just got calls from writers who said, yeah, you hit the nail. I said, well, the climate of the show was not appropriate for a time of war, even though I have a lot of respect for Mayor. I also said something that the New York Times finally corroborated a month and a half ago. I said something that at the time didn't seem to make sense. With the economy, as much as a struggle it is, and it's a tough economy, and Greenspan and so forth, their predictions have not been extremely successful or optimistically effective. But I said New Year's Day, I said people are going to be buying larger homes or remodeling to larger kitchens, and boy, did we get flack. And now, don't you know, 3 weeks ago in the Times, it pointed out because people are not traveling as much and they're spending time at home with human beings. They, you know, in my lifetime as an Italian and a Polish guy, much of our visitations were in people's kitchens.
I have a little complaint, Kristen. You know, all the movies that I've seen, or so many movies from Hollywood, in the movies and in stories, and now in your prediction, Nevada always gets screwed.
Oh, I don't
now,
think...
I'm telling you, they blew up Pahrump where I live here in Mars.
Oh,
Mars Attacks. You remember Mars Attacks?
Oh, my God.
Nevada is always either blown up with a nuclear weapon or the place where the aliens come.
But you know something...
And we're tired of it to some degree. And now here comes your prediction. Maybe the largest sighting in all of history or the last 100 years, that's really, really serious. Stuff.
But you know, Nevada and Las Vegas and the state has survived. I happen to have, I say to people, as you know, 3 million miles is a lot of flying. By the way, and you will sympathize with this, my secretary, some months ago, the phone rang, I'm only home 4 days a month, and she's laughing. And I said, what are you laughing at, Diane? She says, well, it's the airlines. I said, what's so funny? She's, and I won't mention which airline. They've all been good to me. She says, they called and they said, you got enough frequent flyers to go around the world, you know, 20, 30 times. It wouldn't cost you anything. I said, Diane, for a vacation, I don't want to go on a plane around the world. I live in airplanes.
So what do you do for a vacation?
Well,
just go home and sit?
I backpack. I've canoed. I've gone down the Grand Canyon. I've camped in Machu Picchu in Peru. But I say to people, as much as I've in the past year and a half performed in Spain, Italy, New Zealand, Australia, Japan, Saudi Arabia, Wales, Norway, and on I could go, why do you go out of this country before you see places like Lake Tahoe, like Jackson Hole, Wyoming? This country has so much extraordinary beauty.
I agree with that.
To reflect upon, and I'm not knocking the rest of the world, but for God's sakes, see this country first. You will see why men and women have sacrificed their lives.
Yes, but going out of the country gives one an immediate appreciation for it. Immediate. I don't really care where you go. You will suddenly appreciate everything we have here. And
well,
the contrast is so stark. It's good for people to get out of the country and make a comparison. It helps.
Well, the most I would like to think that the most dramatic prediction I ever made. I've written a book, and I'm going to see to it that a copy gets to you. There's a story behind this book, and Newsweek, a writer for Newsweek, researched it and said that it is absolutely true that the galleys were printed before 2001. So anybody who doubts me, you can argue with the Newsweek writer, and he did extraordinary research. What I did, Art, is I thought to myself, the only one that has a right to foretell the future, the most right, is a person in their own field. So I did something which became a literary nightmare. I went to 90 people and said, I want you to write a chapter or some pages and reflect upon how your profession will change in the next 100 years. So the book is called Kreskin's Future with the Stars.
Okay.
But, Art, try to keep 90 people to fulfilling an agenda of time. Oh, my God. I mean...
It's now in our time zone just a little before 11 o'clock. Now, you're doing an hour with me. Did you just come off doing a stage show?
Yeah, I'm here at the Silverton, and I'm here to...
When did you come off stage?
literally an hour and a half ago.
All right. There's enough adrenaline cooking around in you right now to keep you going, it sounds like, for another 2 or 3 hours easy. So how is it for you after you do a show? You're obviously, you know, the adrenaline gets high. We both know how it works, right?
You know, you have it too, Art.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. That's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah,
how long does it take you to get back down?
Well, I run an hour every night. I run about 4 a.m. I've done it all my life, it takes me 2 or 3 hours. And, you know, it's like, compared to an athlete, does an athlete go to bed after the baseball game? Does he go to bed after football?
No, of course not. No. Anybody who does something like this, it's a psychological thing you do to yourself.
Yeah.
And I was wondering how long it took you to get out of it.
It's about 2 hours.
Easily 2.5 hours.
Because, you know, I'm on the intensity of what I do. You know, a magician has his props. A musician has the piano, an organ, a violin. But I'm working with the most unpredictable commodity of all, and that's the human mind. So, people have asked me.
I want to ask you this. I really do. You're a magician, which implies.
Well, I'm a mentalist. I use the term mentalist.
Okay. Well, but magician would work too, right?
Well, not so much anymore because my start was a comic strip. Most people don't remember, called Mandrake the Magician.
What I was going to ask is, do you do magic?
No, very little.
Very little.
I do about 4 minutes in my program.
And the rest is all
dealing with the mind,
metal.
The power of suggestion, thought reading. Now, Johnny Carson and the 88 shows I did with him, which is, they tell me is a record of show. Well, I just did a few weeks ago my 108th show with Regis. But in the 88 shows, what people don't know is that Jack Pierce, bless his soul, it was a prop man, would rush on and put behind a prop on the set a deck of playing cards and hide it there. And Carson and I would go on. I would read the thoughts of some of the guests, what have you. But during the break, Johnny, who was a magician at one time,
watching you on.
Yes. And he'd say to me, you know, Kreskin, I do sleight of hand. I mean, Carson, he says, but what you do with the mind with cards, and obviously, if you saw me tonight at the Silvers, and by the way, a lot of people, UFO people are coming to ask me questions after the show. But if you see what happens with cards on stage, and they're not, it's not sleight of hand. I mean, I had someone leave the set, go into the back of the theater and just take a set of cards and concentrate on them. And I read in the order that they were looking at them. This is why I can't play poker anywhere on the face of the earth. I mean, you'd be interviewing me in concrete tomorrow. But I have to tell you something. I compare myself in this way.
Look, we're almost out of time.
Listen,
we're running out of time.
I will promise you one thing. If I come close to the decided feeling, the particular day, even if it's 2 days from it, and so what have you,
call me instantly.
This is your schedule. Maybe I can talk to you for 5 minutes because I'd like you've been very good to me.
Here's the upside, Kreskin, of the whole thing. If what you say, now that you've made this prediction so public, there's going to be a zillion people out there with video cameras. So, you know, we'll really get to see what happens.
And Art, let's just say, I'm not going to say goodbye to you. I'm going to say to be continued, and probably in greater depth in the very near future.
We'll do a whole show, Kreskin.
Take care, Art.
For now, later. There you go. That's the amazing Kreskin, and those are his words.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002. presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
Friday night, Saturday morning version. We're going to get it on all right. I'm not sure where we're headed now, but it's going to be to a strange place. That much I can tell you. My guest's name, he tells us his name is Gabriel. Probably isn't. I don't think it is. In fact, we'll ask about that. But he says Gabriel. Now, Gabriel is the person that you and your family would want to find when all hope is otherwise lost. In other words, you've already given up for dead. D-E-A-D. And there's absolutely no one left to help you when you're in some foreign jail or taken hostage by guerrillas. He's engaged in and survived mortal combat on a daily basis on almost every continent on the earth for the past 6 years, privately educated and homeschooled in martial arts, close quarters combat, survivalism, weapons, tactics, drama, trauma, field medicine, as well as linguistics over the course of 13 years, and I bet a lot of drama. Gabriel's interests include Eastern philosophy, mysticism, martial arts of all sorts, meditation, traditional Chinese medicine, astronomy, rhetoric and linguistics, verbal and nonverbal persuasion. Verbal and nonverbal persuasion. Ancient civilizations and archaeology, musical performance, musical composition and arrangement, jazz, history, Western medicine, survival skills, tactics, preparedness, herbology, botany, culinary pursuits. He's a bad guy, maybe he's a good guy, really a very good guy. It depends. To some, I guess he'd be considered a terrorist, right? And to others, he'd be considered angelic, going into some foreign country, probably killing people and getting your loved one out. So it just depends on how you look at these things. Anyway, it's going to be a strange trip, and it's coming right up.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night. But you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. Listen on your way to work and again on the way home. Or listen to one of over 1,000 archived shows from the past 3 years. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You'll sleep like a baby, knowing you'll never miss your favorite guests and topics ever again. Remember, a one-year subscription comes out to only 15 cents a day. Sign up today at coasttocoastam.com. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
All right, well, the only name I'm given here for the man we're about to speak with is Gabriel. It's kind of a biblical sort of name, actually, when you think about it, Gabriel. Biblical name. So, Gabriel, is Gabriel really your name or just what we're going to call you tonight?
It's what you'll receive tonight.
That's what I thought. I had a feeling.
Gabriel's a cross between the angel of death, the messenger of God, the bringer of truth. I kind of like to be all those things in one.
So you think, yeah, so it's really an accurate...
an accurate description.
...of you.
Mm-hmm.
I
got to tell you, I am a true fan of yours.
Oh, thank you.
I listen to you almost every night, because I am a night person.
Now, you had a little trouble earlier tonight, right?
Not tonight. It started, it started after I got off the phone with the confirmation with your producers.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, I'm being accosted by about 27 armed men with balaclavas. I don't know if you know what a balaclava is.
No, I don't.
It's what the special forces use to cover their face. It's kind of like a ski mask meant for special forces.
Oh, yeah, okay. Like the SWAT teams use.
That's exactly it, sir.
All right.
They beat the living hell out of me. They did a good job. And
who were they?
Do you know, I wish I could give you an accurate description. Normally, when you're dealing on the county level, you don't get that sort of response. There were literally 24 men, at least. And, I mean, just little old me.
What did they want?
They basically me on the ground with my head in 100 pieces. They wanted to keep me detained. I can't give you a more intelligent explanation than that. I know they planted a couple of guns on me.
Yeah, but they planted guns on
me. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have all of my
weapons. So they claim to be some police authority of
yes,
some
kind.
Yes,
it was some sort
right?
of United States law enforcement. I'm sure there was a conglomeration of...
And they didn't identify themselves?
Well, when you have large semi-automatic weapons pointed at your head, you don't hear those sorts of things.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And so they... they kept you at that location, or they abducted you, or
they
what?
They abducted me.
They abducted you, and you ended up way in what kind of environment?
I ended up in what I think is a federal prison, somewhere in the area of where I am, which I'm not going to disclose for obvious reasons. I'm sure you could imagine my trepidation.
Yeah, I can sure imagine your trepidation. Of course I can.
It was funny. I had no armament on me, not even a pocket knife.
Why not? I mean, with your record, why aren't you armed all the time?
Well, I'm only armed when I go to sleep. I know that sounds odd, but I'm armed when I sleep. When I'm walking around in America, there's no need for me. I mean, there's very few people or groups of people that I don't have the ability to handle on a fist-to-cuff sort of level in a close-quarter combat, open-handed scenario.
Huh. Look, they had to have some motive. Unless it was to punish you for an act that you have committed, short of killing you.
Well, they didn't kill me, obviously. You're talking to me now.
Right. Well, that's what I say. Unless it was something you did that really pissed somebody off.
I have a feeling that they were after me to keep me detained for a long period of time. It just so happened that they weren't quick enough, and I was able to get a call up to my team of lawyers. And
the lawyers?
Well, after about 48 hours and 3 or 4 attempts on my life while I was inside, and a whole bunch of other interesting things that happened.
Yeah, you told me, the one thing you told me before we went on the air, and then I said, don't you do it, I want to hear all this on the air, I don't want to hear it now. You said you got shanked.
Yeah, I got shanked in the knee. Yeah, they
you got shanked in the knee?
Yeah, right on the side of the knee, right near the patella.
This is like in the last, how many hours ago now?
That happened approximately 8 or 9 hours after I got in. They leg shackled me and then double arm shackled me and then Hannibal Lectered my face. I guess they were expecting me to try and take their nose off or something.
So what? You're a mess right now? Your face is a mess?
No, not my face. They taped it up and then put a cage over it.
Oh.
And then,
so
no, my face is a mess, thank God. I'm sure
so
they would.
You were being tortured?
No. I was being...
Yeah, what word would you use?
I was being detained upon further investigation of whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah, but that's being detained with prejudice. You get shanked in the...
Well, that happened while I was inside. After I was inside...
When you were inside with other prisoners. What you're saying is it's some kind of federal prison.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're
now, for a fact that they moved me from county, they moved me to another location, and then they moved me back again. So I know I was... within a 5 to 10 square mile radius of where I was detained. That much I can tell.
But look, you have to have given this a lot of thought, Gabe.
Obviously.
About why they did this. I was off on one scenario there that you pissed somebody off, did something in the past.
Or somebody else did something and needed a bigger fish to get.
Somebody else did something.
Somebody else got caught with something or did something and then decided that they weren't about to handle it and said, hold on, I can pass you off to somebody else. And then I got picked up. Now, being picked up, I still don't know where my car is.
You don't have your car?
No, it's gone. It's completely gone.
How old are you?
At this particular moment, I am just below the age of 25.
How long have you been doing the kind of work you do?
Since I was about 18 or 19.
How frequently, in the kind of work that you do, does it require that you kill?
All the time. When I'm out of the country. You're going to have to excuse me. I'm going to have to think before I speak, obviously.
Thinking before speaking is good.
I can't just let the answer roll off my tongue like I would normally enjoy doing. Certain things, I'm sure there are people listening to me right now. You have a massive listener base.
Yes.
Which is part of the reason why I wanted to come on. It's a fantastic way to prove to the world that there are people out there that can help them when the chips are down.
All right. I guess this is one way of advertising, but since you're just using a name, good one. I like Gabriel. It's a good name. But, I mean, you're just using a name.
I like
you're not giving us any way to for people to contact you. An obvious question was going to be, how do you get clients? How do people come to you or know to come to you?
Usually, because of the areas, other places in the world that I would be working in, things like this have happened in the past to other people. And when they happen like that, there sort of becomes a phone chain, if you want to say, people that know that this has happened to some people, and then they can put you in contact with other people. And
they start reaching out,
yeah,
and eventually your name gets mentioned somewhere there, huh?
Well, the idea of me gets mentioned. The idea of somebody like that existing, and then they find out who might exist like that, and then that's how they find me.
What do you think the average longevity for somebody in your business is? I mean, like, how many years can you do this before you get yourself killed?
Well, there's a more than a 50% chance that you won't come back from your first mission.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Typical example. Let's say I've got a sister in jail in...
pick a country.
Mexico.
Mexico is actually
has
very
real,
easy.
They have real serious, but they got really stinking jails. bad jails in Mexico.
You'd be surprised.
Bad.
Some of the ones in the country are...
Your Bill of Rights in Mexico is just not, transferable. I mean, a lot of people don't understand. You get arrested in a foreign country,
you're done.
Well, you're living...
There's a very good chance. You're going to spend the rest of your life in jail, sir.
Yeah, you're living under real different rules, that's for sure.
The best part is that most people don't know that it applies here, too.
I've heard you can buy your way out of Mexican jails.
You can. You can. It's not going to be as hefty as some other Middle America or Central American countries, or South American countries, for that matter. But Mexico's not as bad as some of the other ones that you could be put into. You get Panama and below, you're asking for problems.
Really? Brazil?
Brazil, I am lucky enough to have fantastic contacts in. The police department down there is foremost in their mind is helping people. You'll find that the amount of mix-ups and miscommunications that are involved are mostly the only reasons why you get locked up in Peru. Or, I'm sorry, not Peru, Brazil.
Brazil.
Peru is another place that was on my mind.
Why? Is Peru tough?
Peru's awful. Peru's just nasty.
You're at risk when you travel. I mean, even though you've got a passport and you think the embassy will come rushing to your...
They don't.
They don't.
No, they wash their hands of you because of the fact that there's so much going on in the international scene these days. They can't use the kind of pull that the United States had before.
So unless you're really somebody.
Unless you're a somebody, there's a good chance you're screwed. And then you get to people like me that might be able to help.
Take Peru, for example. How corrupt is law enforcement in Peru compared to, say, America?
I know that 10 to 15% of their own police officers are annually convicted of racketeering and such like that off of their own people.
10 to 15%?
Uh-huh.
So...
And then they get reinstated.
So then you could be perhaps put in jail...
Because you didn't get
that money. What amounts to a kidnapping, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And with the government the way it is there right now, you're asking for problems.
Let's say somebody's in jail in Peru.
Okay.
And I don't care whether it's a righteous bust or a non-righteous bust. Now, by the way, do you care? In other words, if they're kidnapped by some corrupt person or they went down there and they
don't involve myself.
Let's say they went down there and hit a bank in Peru, and they're in jail for bank robbery.
Why did they hit the bank?
Well, I don't know, because they needed the money, because that's where the money is.
Well, maybe that's where their money was.
Well, maybe, but let's just say they hit a bank. In other words, they committed an actual crime in Peru. And the family comes to you, and they've got enough money. I assume it takes a hell of a lot of money.
It's quite expensive, yes.
How expensive? Let's say, just an average, throw a number at me. You've got somebody in jail in Peru, and you're going to have to go down there and break their asses out of jail. I mean, break them out one way or the other.
Okay, you're going to be dealing with a certain amount of men and equipment and armament. The men range from 6 men to 13 men, being 2 6-man A-teams with one team leader. Those men have to get paid. Now, these sorts of people don't work for nothing.
What do they work for?
It depends on where you're going, what you're doing, and how long you're going to be there. Also, the odds of coming back.
Yeah, odds of coming back, always important.
Yes, that's true. You're dealing with probably somewhere between $50,000 to $100,000 a piece. If you're going anywhere outside of the Americas, you're going to be dealing with over $100,000 per man.
Okay, so we're already up around $700,000, three-quarters of $1 million or more.
$1.3 million for the men.
For starters?
Yes.
All right. Equipment, transportation, logistics, all that stuff?
It's funny that you mentioned that. There's a great way to be able to move these sorts of things in an expeditious fashion. We do it by using bonded warehouses all across the world. And usually the cost of one bonded warehouse skid for our particular teams, somewhere around $76,000 to $80,000, including equipment.
How do you get into a business like this?
It's all my mother's fault.
excuse me, your mother? Your mother?
Yes. It's funny that you mentioned that.
What did she do, bounce you on her knee and say, honey, you're going to grow up to be a great hitman?
No, I'm not a hitman. A hitman kills people for no reason.
No. You know, or
I'm a patriot. I'm a patriot.
Okay, well, but there are a lot. I'm glad you're a patriot.
All right, let's put it in more terms that you'll...
You're a mercenary.
I'm an expediter.
At least you're a mercenary, right?
Okay.
I mean, that's not unfair, is it?
No, I prefer the term professional soldier, but...
Professional soldier, mercenary.
But at the base level, at the lowest common denominator, I am an expediter.
Yeah, an expediter. All right, well, let's think about
this a
little bit.
I implement.
These are just words. Yeah, these are just words we're using, but basically still, you take a team, if necessary, and you go into a foreign country... And you probably end up in a firefight killing people, and you go get somebody for a whole bunch of money. That's what you do.
Yes.
What if somebody's kidnapped and they're in jail in Peru and they don't have any money?
They're in trouble. they better have a damn good reason why they're there. I don't do pro bono work. Or at least I don't do it very, I don't do it with a clear conscience.
Now you were blaming this all on your mother.
My mother said when I was very young, she said, you will not be a victim. You will not allow other people to be victims if you can help it. And since that time, since the ripe young age of, I guess about 8 or 9 years old, I've been bred for this.
Wow. Like Superman was bred, sort of.
Yeah, if you want to say that. I don't have his superpowers. It's just kind of tenacity and organizational skills for me.
I remember in one Superman movie, he was coming to Earth. You may have seen this. And he was receiving some instructions on what he was to be and what he was to do. I think that was it. Maybe that was 2001. Anyway, in a really cool movie, that happened.
Yes, sir.
And so almost from the womb, you began... headed toward what you're doing now, huh?
If not that, as close as you can get to it.
Okay. Stay right there, Gabriel. That's the name he's using is Gabriel. He goes into foreign countries and kills people and breaks things.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
But she lets me down every time. Can make her mine. She's no one's lover tonight. With me she'll be so inviting. I want her all for myself. Oh, temptation has come through my mind. Oh, temptation has. You gotta love me. Gotta love me.
Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
Well, one thing's for sure, there are people out there who do what Gabriel does. Or says he does. There's no question about that. There are people who do this. They, you know, they go into foreign countries and they get people out for a price. For a very big price, actually. Whether or not Gabriel is one of these people is for you to decide as you listen to him. This is very interesting stuff, and particularly appropriate, I must say, for a Friday night, Saturday morning. We'll be right back.
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Okay, once again, here's Gabriel. Now, I understand, Gabriel, there are people who do the things that you're claiming that you do. I understand there are these people, and they're for real, mm-hmm. and they're usually real quiet about what they do. Now, obviously, a lot of people's BS meter is going tick, 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 and they're not believe. Why should we believe that you are one of these people?
Actually, it's not for those people to believe. It's for the people that actually have the issue that I would be able to help them with. For the other people, that's of no consequence to me. I can keep on doing what I'm doing.
You don't care whether they believe it or not.
Oh, I couldn't care less. It's for that one or two people that are out there in however.
Why would you decide to come on my program?
I was in contact with, one of your previous guests. I'm not going to say who it was. But that particular person put one of your producers in contact with me.
Yeah, I know who that is, by the way. Ha,
okay,
ha, ha.
Very good.
I won't
now,
say.
Well, I hope so.
I won't say.
Okay, and he can vouch for the fact.
I can vouch for the fact that the guest who put us in contact with you is a reliable, trusted guest who appears on this program. I could say that much.
Very intelligent person, by the way.
So, oh yes, very intelligent person. You know, I can say all that much I know is true.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that gives you some credibility in terms of being who you say you are. For me, I
understand.
I can't tell the audience
thing.
So that might not help them.
It's a difficult thing for somebody to grasp because it's not within their reality.
Well, look, a lawyer, a defense attorney, for example,
mm-hmm.
They're kind of like mercenaries in a way. They accept usually a rather large amount of money
yes.
to get their clients off, whether the client is guilty or not.
Yeah.
And basically, you do that, right?
Well, I see where you're going with this. There are certain things that I don't deal with.
Like what?
Drugs. for one.
Drugs?
Drugs are a dirty business.
But at least half the people, if not more, that are in jail, not only in this country, but all around the world, are there for drugs.
You're right. How many of those people do you think really are belong there? Ballpark figure.
You know, probably most of them.
Okay.
I mean, the people that are popped for marijuana possession, no.
Well, I particularly am a very big fan of that particular substance. I don't drink alcohol and I don't smoke cigarettes.
All right, so then suppose somebody is in jail for marijuana possession.
I wouldn't have a problem banning them out.
You wouldn't?
No. I think that that's...
But anybody in jail for hard drugs or even...
You're dealing with coke, heroin...
Even using hard drugs, you wouldn't go get those people?
No. No, because there's a reason why they're going overseas doing that sort of thing, involving themselves in those substances. This isn't a college kid that went on a spring break trip over to Thailand or something like that and then ended up in a jail. This is somebody that is getting some sort of hard time.
Even so, let's say that you go after somebody who's in jail for some other reason. I used bank robbery a little while ago. That would work, right? I mean, if they...
I don't see why not. I mean, you can...
All right, if you go into a country and you get this person out of jail and you have to kill in the process of doing that, then perhaps not from your own point of view, nor the point of view of those listening, since, you know, you're a patriotic American, you're not a hitman, right? But to the people who got hit with the bullets that you threw... To those people, you're a hitman.
I am an expert in less lethal tactics. I don't kill unless I have to.
But we're talking about those occasions when you do have to kill. And then
I have to kill.
Okay, so from their point of view, you're a hitman.
Hitman gets paid money to kill somebody for that particular reason.
Yeah.
I was being paid money to break somebody out of jail. That was the broken egg in the omelet.
Sure, but in the process of that, not only the egg got smashed, but a bullet went through the head of whoever stood in your way, and you had to kill. I mean, you said it yourself. You kill if you have to kill.
Whoops.
Well,
I don't feel bad about that. I guess
that's an interesting question all unto itself.
Why don't I feel bad about that?
Well, no. I've never killed. I've never killed.
And you weren't.
I'm like everybody else. I was a medic in the Air Force.
That's
so
a great
I was
profession.
In the business of patching people back up who nearly got killed. Anyway, the point is, I've never killed, and so I cannot imagine what it would be like. And I guess only you could. Can you tell us what is it like? Is it? I mean, you've got to reflect on what you just did. Especially the first time.
Well, I know of some people, soldiers, that tend to like to walk up on the bodies of the people that they've just taken their lives and see the look on their faces.
Yeah.
I don't particularly subscribe to that theory. I'd rather just leave and be left wondering. That doesn't bother. I'd rather leave it that way. I don't need to. I do it as purely a mechanical process. It's nothing else than that. Somebody attacks you in a lethal manner.
So you take no thrill in killing.
No,
I'm
not a thrill killer. I'll be honest.
No perverse pleasure in killing.
Maybe with a sniper scope at 1,000 yards, because of the competition involved. Kind of you and the wind and the elements, and you can make the shot. But when you have to get up right behind somebody,
how are you trained as a sniper?
Privately. Trained with a .223 and a .308 on a Leopold scope.
Boy, you're in some kind of dangerous game. How many missions, lethal-type missions, have you been on?
Well, as far as a day-to-day lethal or just the actual op,
I don't know how to qualify this.
Okay, I'll answer them both then. I would say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that year. 2, 3. Less than 21.
That's a lot of missions still. where your life is at risk. How many, you form teams, you said, right?
Yes, they're usually 6-man teams or 13-man teams.
Okay, how do you find these men? How do you know these men are loyal to you? How do you test them?
Well, first, you don't know in the beginning. I mean, these guys are taking money to go overseas and kill people.
Mm-hmm.
It would be more of a necessity to background check these sorts of people, and we have ways of doing that.
And so what kind of backgrounds do you want? You want
smart
guys? You want Marines? What do you want?
I particularly and personally like independent thinkers.
SEAL team people, that kind of group?
No, those aren't independent thinkers. Independent thinkers are people that were one time in the military, then were discharged. Nobody current. It's a disability to be a current military serviceman. And
sure. Oh, sure. Sure. No, I was referring to backgrounds.
Usually you want somebody who's a little rough around the edges, more than a little, but is smart enough to know when to keep his mouth shut and his head down. You would also want to try and find people that have private backgrounds, private lifestyles. You don't want people that are very uppity, social, butterfly type of people. You want people that you can pretty much imagine them staying away in their little cabin in Montana or Nevada or Arizona until they come out to do their job, and then they go back, go fishing. Those sorts of people. You want the quiet.
So it's like they just take a slice out of their life. Everything changes. They go and do this, and then they go back to their quiet life.
That's how it is with me.
Huh. These kind of people hard to find, Gabriel?
No.
No.
There's plenty of them.
How do you test them? There must be some,
Usually, we send them into a swimming op underneath a particular bridge that I know about, the shark-infested waters, and we send them in the middle of the night, and they have to cross it, and it's usually about half a mile long, and if they can get through it, they're tough enough to go with me.
Without being eaten?
Well, I'm not going to say they're going to be eaten, but I've been nibbled on a little bit when I tested it out.
Uh-huh.
Because barracuda, last time I went in it, there were two bull sharks. Barracuda, it was nasty. Terrible rip current, too. You have to go in full BDUs, rucksack, 75 pounds of rope, armament, if you have it with you. It's tough. I take it then that
these men find you in sort of the reverse way that clients find you. In other words,
yeah,
the word is like out there at some level, and so when somebody wants a job like this and they think they're qualified, they find a way to find you, huh?
They either find a way to find me or another organization like me. I'm sure there's more of me out there than just me.
Actually, you must know. You know something about your competition. How many organizations or groups are there like yours?
In this particular country?
Yeah.
Okay. There are two sorts of organizations. You're dealing with a corporate sort of entity, and then you're dealing with a clandestine entity. I'm more on the clandestine side. I don't like to publicize myself, but there are groups out there, and I'm not going to say those names because obviously that's my competition.
Yeah, don't do that.
No,
right.
I won't. But they are government-funded private organizations that go and take care of these sorts of things, but they do it to their ends.
How do you manage to live with organizations like, the big ones, the CIA, the NSA, all those guys who know damn well what you're doing?
I try to stay out of their way.
Yeah? And do they stay out of your way?
Up until a couple nights ago? Yes. I never really had this sort of brush. I mean, I don't get arrested in this country. All of my armament and weaponry is legal under my particular name. I have no reason to have illegal weapons or anything like that.
Hmm.
That sort of thing is provided and procured by the client in an international outsourced basis.
And it's just waiting for you where you...
Wherever we happen to meet up.
Sometimes we
go through the air. Sometimes we come up in the water. Depends on, we do more than just break people out. We do asset recovery. I'll give you an example. There are a lot of times...
people's money, in other words.
People's money,
stuff.
Property.
Yeah.
That's another big thing that I'm into now that I've been doing a lot of is taking back people's land for them in foreign countries where the dictatorship has taken it from them.
how the hell do you do that? I mean, if you forcefully take back land and you're in the middle of a dictatorship, then you're going to have to have a virtual army there to keep that land.
Well, timing is everything. The particular time that you set the operation to happen, the cultural and political climate in a lot of these countries is a daily changing event.
Yeah, that's true.
And you'll find that there's opportune times to do everything.
Huh.
I would call mention to the turmoil that's happening in Venezuela and Argentina at this particular time.
Yeah, I was about to mention that, yes.
Yes, and there are persons that are in there that probably have need of my assistance that I don't even know about yet.
So you've probably always thought, and it may be true, that the agencies
mm-hmm.
would kind of look at what you're doing with a wink and a nod,
I would hope these guys would take their shot,
you know, and if they can get it done, fine, we're not involved.
Yeah, it's almost a freebie for them. I mean, who wouldn't take a mulligan if they couldn't? Especially the U.S. government, who has a history of failed black ops.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, you know, basically, as long as you're serving their purpose in a wink and a nod sort of way, I would imagine they would leave you alone.
And I try my best to do that.
But I mean, that really does bring us back to what just happened to you. You got tossed in jail. You got shanked.
Yeah, I got stabbed pretty good. That was the third attempt. What they do is, when they send you in there, they give you a blanket and they give you a toothbrush and things like that. And they make knives or shanks out of the toothbrushes.
Yeah.
And they hit me with one of them suckers. But they weren't smart enough to hit the heart. That was their mistake.
Jill, you must have offended somebody very seriously.
I'm probably offending them right now.
You probably are. But I mean,
the best part is I don't have any guns here to help me.
Yeah, you must have, you really, I've got to press this. You've got to have some clue what brought this on. You must.
I do in the sense that it is a cross between Murphy's Law and the Law of Unintended Consequences.
Yeah, I know about those.
Yes, I do. And I know you know. And I've been one of those people that when my luck runs good, it runs great. And when it doesn't, it doesn't. And I guess the pendulum swung the other way on me 48 hours ago.
Couldn't you consider this perhaps a message that if you keep doing whatever it is that just got you in trouble, you're going to die?
The only way to actually do this work is to consider yourself dead already.
Oh, there's an interesting line to... Okay, so you mean you sort of...
I don't have a death wish.
You kind of mentally write yourself off?
Yeah. You'll find that it works a hell of a lot better than trying to get back to your nice, safe wife and kids and home and white picket fence and all that crap.
You couldn't do it do you have that, all that crap?
No.
No picket fence, no wife, no family to speak of?
No.
Direct family, I'm talking about, you know, like... Parents are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Girlfriends, what about girlfriends?
There aren't too many of them that want to be around a guy that would rather clean his AR-15 than go out to dinner with them. I spend a very, very good portion of my time indoors. I train consistently. I read. I don't spend a whole lot of time socializing.
You got to figure at any moment and or all the time, your life is in danger.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I just had the unwary feeling that somebody was going to come through the door in the next couple of moments while I was on hold, and then you'd be dead air getting back and say, where did he go?
Yeah. Well, you know, in view of what just happened to you, it's something you can't rule out. And
no,
so an obvious question is, you know, are you sitting there with it? You say when you're in this country, you're not armed. Aren't you sitting there with...
No,
you're not sitting there with a gun.
In
you're
country.
Crazy.
No, you misdirected my words.
All right, you are sitting there with a gun, at least.
I'm not going to say whether I am or not, but I will say that after I was taken to where I was taken. When I got back, I just got back a couple of minutes before you came on the air.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know how the heck I'm talking to you. It has to be divine intervention. Because I should be dead. Two, I shouldn't be talking to you right now. I should at least be back in jail.
How do you know after talking to me or during talking to me, as you just mentioned, you might not get dead? It's a concern.
They're going to have to, this time they're going to have to get a fight. I'm not going to go as easily.
Well, there's nothing wrong with saying, I'm sitting here with a gun. I've had a gun for years and years and years. Ever since I was 12 years old, I've owned guns. I got a gun sitting right here. I wouldn't be without it. I've always had the point of view that, if you live out in the country, the sheriff is going to do everything he can for you, but he's still going to arrive, in 20 minutes, and which be enough time
after the fact.
It put, the chalk line be around your body there. Mm-hmm. That's what the sheriff is going to be able to do. So if you're going to protect your life, you're going to have to do it yourself. So,
exactly. You'd be surprised how easily you can protect your life with the lights off and a small knife.
Yeah, but never take a knife to a gunfight.
Oh, you just said the grandest words of all time. That's why at this particular moment I could be at a deficit. They ransacked where I live. They ransacked it.
So they so
you didn't get into that part.
So they were looking. They were looking for something.
They were looking for something.
Do you know what they were looking for?
You got me. You got me because they obviously didn't find it. I mean, they took armament. The armament was in my name, and I can actually get it if I choose to go back to the particular places where it is.
All right. Hold on, Gabriel. It's top of the hour. You get to rest. We all get to rest. I'm Art Bell, and you're listening to Gabriel on Coast.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
Touched the moon, but he left me much too soon. His ladybird, he left his ladybird.
Ladybird, come on down, I'm here waiting.
Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Roaring through the nighttime from the high desert. Alan in Mesa, Arizona says, I just heard your guest say something that tells me he's probably real. I'm an old door gunner from Nam, and I always told myself before going into a hot LZ that I was already dead. That's real. I don't know, it's for you to decide. There are certainly people who do what the man we call Gabriel here does. You can be damn sure of that. Whether he's one of those or not is in the middle of what I guess you're all deciding right now. But Alan in Mesa thinks he's for real. We'll be right back.
Take Coast to Coast AM with you anywhere on your mobile phone. coasttocoastam.com can be conveniently accessed on your iPhone and most Android platforms, which means that you are never without your Coast to Coast AM fix. If you're a Coast to Coast Insider subscriber, you can listen to the show live in the middle of the night or previous shows 24/7. Plus, you can browse all the great photos, videos, and news stories. Keeping up with Coast to Coast AM has never been easier with our Coast Insider service. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
Okay, back once again to Gabriel, and, you know, to Larry, that seemed like a very real statement that you almost have to sort of mentally write yourself off, so that if you get in a situation of mortal combat, you're prepared to die if it comes to that.
It's the easiest way to get out alive.
Is it really?
It's an old trick used by the samurais of the feudal Japan, where they would consider themselves already dead, and then that gave you the ability to fight so fiercely that your life force, your spirit, basically gave you the power to overcome whatever obstacles or combat situations that you would be involved in.
In these years that you've been doing this, Gabriel, how many of your men have you lost?
More than I can count on two hands.
Oh, my God, really?
You have to be prepared to not have those people come back with you. I mean, you can't take your buddy that you know down the street. It's like, hey, come on, let's go do this. It doesn't work like that. You don't want to make connections with these sorts of people. You know you're going to be connected to them in a comrade sort of way, camaraderie. There's a good chance that a lot of them do not survive the ordeal.
Do you know, I mean, you must know, you run the operation, is that correct?
I do.
You
I
do.
Have,
all right,
one,
so then,
I have one or two other people that do logistical and GPS.
So then you really more or less know, as the person who's running the operation, when you're putting somebody in a probable less than 50-50 situation?
Less than 50-50 will come out of it, yes. They know these things up front, and I know it, sending them into it.
Why are there people willing to do these things? In other words, the ultimate price is life, right? That's the ultimate price. So even for heavy money.
Money is the all-encompassing common denominator that drives everything in this world.
It absolutely is. People can say whatever in the hell they want, but you're right. Money drives everything, and it certainly would drive something like this. And I can understand that. And I guess I can understand there are people who would go into a situation where there's a less than half a chance they're going to come out alive for $100,000, huh?
At least.
Situation, a lot of situations where you have to, for example, use a Black Hawk or a helicopter of some sort for insertion.
Yes, you can pick those up pretty cheap, actually, considering, I mean, when you take into effect their cost, you can get them used. Things like that.
Do you fly?
I do not, as many things as I do, and I consider myself to be quite multifaceted.
That's not one of them.
No, it never has been. I'm great with a boat. I'm fantastic with a boat, but no, when it comes to that, my area of emphasis is, aggressive driving, offensive driving.
So then you've got to have
like that.
Access to pilots who understand, the tenuous situation they're putting themselves in, right?
Yes. Or you insert in a point that is not applicable to them.
Are there a lot of pilots? I have known in my lifetime, I'm not going to name names,
mm-hmm.
but I've had good friends who, as pilots, ran drugs and ran guns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of that, there's a lot of that that goes on.
It's an easy way to get it across.
Yeah. Yeah,
part is they don't have to stop; they just drop it.
So,
kind of what they do with us?
So, I would assume that for the right price, there'd be plenty of pilots out there who would do the kind of work you need done, huh?
Brother, if the roast beef is right, you can do anything. The question is getting the money.
Yeah, well, I take it you get your money up front, of course.
Well, yes and no.
Really?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. A lot of times it's half now, half upon completion, with all proper armament and equipment paid for in advance. A lot of times you always get something up front. I mean, it's part of the, I don't want to say bartering system, but it's part of...
So you push it how far? You push it to expenses, equipment, and some percentage up front?
It's at least half.
At least half
of the profit that would be taken in by the individuals completing the op.
How many more years do you think you can do this before your number comes up? I mean, you must think about that a lot, after all.
You want to know the honest answer?
I do, yes.
I'm going to be real lucky if I come out of this year.
Out of this year?
Yeah, it's getting pretty warm, especially with the way things are going in the world today. I mean, it's just, it's awful.
Suppose some ultra-right-wing type came to you and said, look, here's X number of millions of dollars.
Ultra-right-wing from where, sir?
Just ultra-right-wing for America.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
And said, look, all right, here's several million dollars. Kill Bin Laden. Find.
Oh, I would do it for free. I've been waiting for somebody to come up and pay me the money and equipment to take his ass out.
You'd do it?
Oh, yeah.
And you think you could do it? I mean,
absolutely.
Right now we've got Marines over there searching caves, cave to cave, that kind
of thing. Not in the caves. He's nowhere where they think he is.
No?
No, and I'm not saying that I have some sort of preconceived or pre-notioned idea from somebody else that has given me his location. I don't know. I mean, the guy's a snake hiding under a rock. It's just they're not looking under the right rocks.
Well, you know, one of the problems Americans in Afghanistan have, just the way we had in Vietnam and elsewhere, is, you know, we look...
We stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. We stick out like a sore thumb. That's right.
Well, I'm kind of lucky in that sense. I'm a swarthy-looking individual, come from a Mediterranean background, but when I grow a beard, damn if I don't look Pakistani.
Oh, really?
I mean, I'm Italian by descent, but I'm real dark, and I grow a very thick beard, so I can pass. It's your ability to assimilate into other cultures, and Americans don't like to assimilate. We don't like to assimilate into other cultures. We like to have other cultures assimilate into ours.
Yeah, that's our ego, all right.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And you have to be in... This job involves ego, and it involves the void of ego. You have to know when to shut it off.
Well, isn't it time for you to shut off everything? In other words, you said you might not make it through this year. Now, you obviously, even though you write yourself off as dead when you're going into an operation,
mm-hmm.
still, in the larger picture, you put some value, I'm sure, on your life. So,
very much so.
There's got to come a time when you say to yourself, too hot, I know I'm dead if I don't stop doing this. You're pretty close to that time right now, aren't you?
I think so. I would be very out of line if I said that I could do this for another couple of years or till I'm 30 or 40 and even have an semblance of having a chance. You don't.
Is this mostly a young man's game?
No.
Really?
It's a poor man's game.
What do you mean?
People do this. Me, I'm a weird bird. I don't get the rush out of killing people. I get the rush out of the complexity and the logistical ridiculousness of such an operation. Those are the things that I like.
All right. Can you take a couple of operations that are now history, and without giving me specific details and names of clients or anything like that, can you give me
sure.
the details of how you executed a couple of operations?
Okay. There are a myriad of particular things that I do. I don't just bust people out of prisons.
Right.
I do exceedingly high-risk personal security work for people that are in imminent danger of losing their lives.
Right.
I do asset recovery and hostage rescue, of course. I also do what you would call rapid deployment and threat elimination.
Threat elimination.
Yes.
Let's define threat elimination.
Okay. Threat elimination is particular individuals, may they be businessmen or anybody of that sort of nature, who comes in contact with a threat that is provocated towards them, their family, or their property,
mm-hmm.
whether it be abroad or in the domestic United States. And what you do is you map it out. You see exactly where that threat is coming from.
Yes.
You do your analysis of how you think it would turn out if your assistance wasn't provided, and then you try and intercept in the appropriate amount of time to produce a positive outcome.
You try to intercept the execution of a threat. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. That way you get everybody together, bang them all at once.
So, liquidation.
You could say that.
I did.
I spent a good portion of time just before talking with your producers in a South American country, picking off rebels at a long distance, and I got paid by the rebel. Carilla.
Wait a minute. Picking off rebels at a distance?
Mm-hmm.
And you were paid by?
I was paid by the rebel.
What do you mean by the rebel?
Well, you know, you have a head of cattle, you get paid by the head.
Yeah.
Same thing.
You were paid by the rebel to eliminate his own men?
I was paid by the businessmen who are under attack from the threat of those rebels.
Oh.
There are a good portion of these people that, or these groups, let's call them factions, that have upwards, they have thousands of men. Thousands. And they attack businessmen, whether they be ranchers. In this case, this was a rancher.
Yeah, I've heard there's a lot of businessmen in foreign countries that really do get in this kind of trouble.
They're getting the living hell kicked out of them because of the fact that they're such an easy target. There's such thing as a stationary target. That's called a sitting duck. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Then there's your hard target. A hard target is a target that has realized his or her or it, its vulnerability.
Right,
and
sure.
Then prepares defenses for such a inevitable outcome.
Sure, because then you're facing somebody who's going to be wanting to take you out.
Exactly.
And is going to be sitting there prepared to do so.
I had a rancher in a particular country who was having difficulty with a faction of individuals, upwards of thousands, and he was a cattle rancher, and he would move 50 to 100,000 head of cattle at a pop by truck, and this is a massive motorcade of trucks. You could just imagine.
I can, yes.
The rebel groups would intercept these motorcades and burn the cattle alive inside the trucks and kill the drivers.
God, why?
Why not?
Well, because, I mean, what does that accomplish? I could understand.
It accomplishes fear. Fear is the motivating factor.
So they weren't trying to steal. They didn't want the assets.
No, they just wanted to kill. They just wanted to take care of it. Maybe they wanted his land. Maybe if he doesn't have any more cattle, he doesn't have any more land.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
You'd be surprised how quickly those people turn tail when their guys start dropping like flies for no reason.
No, I wouldn't be surprised. So you take a team of, snipers with you?
I take a team of individuals. On every team, you have certain people that perform certain operations.
Right.
You have your intelligence men, your radio men, you have a team leader, you have grenadiermen, you have weapons specialists and demo experts. And when you take a particular team to a particular area for a particular op, in this case, it was long range, you would have more than one sniper available, yes.
And so you'd just start picking them off, and it didn't take too much of that, too many of their men to be just...
You'd be surprised.
No, I wouldn't.
Especially when they can't see where it's coming
from. It's an absolutely very strong message, killing, mm-hmm. you know, dropping men.
Leave it alone.
Real strong message.
Yeah, let it go. Find somebody else. This isn't a... this isn't a victim anymore. I'm just going to fight you.
Yeah. So how do you justify this killing in your own head?
These people are murderers, cold murderers. These aren't people that are nice and walk down the street and you see them and they say hello to you. These are people that make their life by shooting people for no reason, women, children, animals, for no reason.
Oh, yeah. There was something about animals. You don't kill animals, do you?
No, never.
Never?
No, I don't hunt. If it's dead already, there's nothing I can do about it, and then I gotta eat it. It's okay. But I can't kill Bambi. I can't kill something that's defenseless. There's no challenge in it. And two, it's wrong.
Well, it's interesting. I understand that. I mean, I really do understand that. When I was 12 years old, my dad gave me a .22, and I had this big house, and from way up on the third floor of this house, I shot a squirrel. And,
messed you up, huh?
Oh, God. I went down, and the squirrel was on the ground, wasn't dead all the way. And, I went ahead and killed it, and I, in all my life, I've never gotten over that, and I would no more kill an animal. I would no more ever kill an animal. I have regretted that and felt guilty for that all my life. And
well,
so I understand that. just an innocent animal, and what a stupid thing I did, and I'll always, for all my life, regret that. So
there's a purity in animals and children that you can't, there's something that does not permit me to be able to humanly do that.
Yeah, but even so, it's odd to consider, it's an odd thing to consider that you would not kill an animal and yet
I'll kill
a human being, a human being, with no problem at all.
Not even a blink of an eye. But remember, I'm garnered by reason and logic. I don't kill for no reason.
I'm not sure. I don't know if reason and logic covers that. You know, you maybe it does. I guess.
Well, like I told your producers, my logic and my reason might be convoluted to the rest of the world. That's not my problem. I sleep well at night. That's what I know. Well, I sleep at night.
That's another good question. I guess when you sleep, you must sort of sleep. You on the one hand, you say well, but on the other hand,
it's.
You gotta sort of have, like, one part of your brain has to be enough alive, enough awake, enough conscious to save your life if, and in your circumstance, you might need it, right?
You always have to be at a high awareness level.
Okay, Gabriel, hold on. We're at a break point here at the bottom of the hour. Gabriel is a man who puts his life on the line. Mortal Kombat, almost all the time. Goes out and kills people and breaks things and retrieves stuff and people. And that's the business he says he's in. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
Up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. Have all these things in our memory stored, and they use them to help.
Yeah.
Premier Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
Gabriel goes out and gets people out of jails. He retrieves people's property, and in doing so, he kills. And maybe he tortures. I don't know. That's something I'm going to ask. I've got so many questions. We are going to open the phone lines here, though, because I really, really want to get some of you in on this tonight. And I know a lot of people are sitting out there, and they're making up their minds as they listen. And that's what I'm doing, too. So more of all of that in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
Boy, I've been down some strange paths of doing this program. This is definitely one of them. I'm going to ask Gabriel sort of a series of questions here very quickly, and then we're going to try and take some phone calls. In the course of doing your work, Gabriel, have you ever been in a situation where you had to get information from somebody? In other words, your only job was not to go and, and to kill somebody, just straight out to eliminate them, but rather to obtain information. In other words, I guess I'm asking, have you ever had to torture anybody?
You'd be surprised what kind of persuasion sometimes is necessary to...
Surprise me.
This is a good one. okay. Let's say, hypothetically, you had somebody somewhere, and you didn't know where they were. Your intel was not that good. And intelligence gathering is the single most important thing you can do during an operation or to set up an operation. You'd be surprised how quickly people are given to give you the proper answers when there's the threat of a bolt cutter taking off body parts.
A bolt cutter. Yeah, that would do it.
Or something to that effect.
So
get creative.
Most people, probably 99% of everybody in the situation with a bolt cutter over a part of their body,
they're going to... You always got to go for the gusto.
So, that would be... a very high percentage of the people presented with that situation talk big time.
And then the others?
And the others?
They end up talking.
But after the bolt cutter has worked once or twice, huh?
I've never had to go past twice.
Never past twice. Yeah.
You always start low and work your way up.
Well, what about that aspect of it? I mean, it's one thing to clean kill somebody, you know, a shot through the head.
That's not my specialty. I'm a close-quarter combat, open-handed, and bludgeoning, and sharp object expert.
Yeah, you seem to lean toward...
I enjoy getting my hands dirty.
The cutting tools, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Any idea why?
Absolutely. Just because something may be cleaner or more humane doesn't always mean that it's better or serves the proper end.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's a necessity to be quiet. And even with suppressors, you're not quiet.
Yeah. Suppose you're in a situation where you have to take on multiple attackers.
By myself?
I don't know how often you put yourself in that kind of situation. I assume
daily.
Most times you're with it daily?
That's part of my practice regimen.
How do you practice?
I spend a great deal of time training by myself, but I tend to put myself in the most realistic, life-threatening situations when I'm going through training to try and create the realism that I'll deal with on a daily basis.
You actually...
I go out and get... I go into the worst parts of town and...
And try to get mugged.
get mugged, pick fights. I don't pick fights, but they just come to me.
Oh, if you're looking for a fight, if you're out there looking for a fight, you can usually find one.
Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised how many times that the safety and numbers routine camouflages one's own stupidity.
Really?
They come after you, and there's a group of them, but I'll tell you what.
What?
You take out the first two, three, four, five, or however many there are, and the rest tend to run in horror. Nobody wants to fight a person that enjoys fighting multiple people at the same time.
You enjoy that?
That I enjoy, yeah, very much.
And you enjoy going out and inviting a mugging, just to test yourself?
I've spent a good deal of time throughout my training where that's happened, yes. Good deal of time. I would say over 100 that you could count.
100.
If you were to call up particular law enforcement agencies and you had my real name where the things were actually involved in, you could probably report 100. Hell of a lot more that you couldn't. I mean, I've done a lot of traveling, so.
So you just do that to keep the edge?
Yes. When you spar somebody or you do some sort of point sparring or BS like that, that's kiddies play. That's not real. That's a sheltered environment. Combat isn't a sheltered situation. It's balls out 100% and the likelihood of you dying is very good. Now, do you want to give yourself a false reality and say that, no, I don't need that? I can do it. I can go into the real deal 100% all the time and come out. Where do you think it would be a more intelligent, prudent choice to test yourself in conditions that you can somewhat control? You're not in a foreign country.
Or so not.
Sometimes maybe you are.
Yeah. No. I guess that makes sense. What about failed operations? Have you had any failed operations?
Oh, yeah.
You have?
Yes.
What do you think is the biggest cause of a failed operation?
Bad intelligence gathering, very much so.
Yeah, you really lay into the intelligence part of this, don't you?
You have to properly. I grew up with the 7 P's. Proper prior preparation prevents piss poor performance. I have lived by it. And when circumstances outside of your control come into play, the more organized you are, chance favoring the prepared mind and all, the better opportunity you have to come out. And I may have gotten kicked out of the Boy Scouts when I was a kid, but damn if I didn't follow the motto.
Intelligence, you keep stressing how important intelligence is.
Be all end all.
Yeah, be all end all. That costs money too, right?
Absolutely. That's actually sometimes more expensive than what you get. It's a situation where you have to pay. And if you don't pay a lot, you don't get a lot. You get what you pay for. In information retrieved from other sources, whether it be confidential informants, you could also get it from actually doing the recon yourself.
All right. Here's a question for you.
Yes, sir.
I've done a lot of international travel. I've been around the world several times. So
yes,
I've been through customs and immigration of, about every country you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Including the roughest, the communist Chinese, for example.
Oh, I love the Chinese. I think
you love the
people.
Chinese. All right. Well, anyway, they've got some pretty tough customers over there. They look at you really carefully. And here's
all
my,
over the place.
Here's my point.
Yes.
If American, alphabet agencies are aware with a wink and a nod or whatever with some of the things you do.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to pass through customs and immigration, usually, I would imagine, or at least in many cases. And the alphabet agencies in these other countries probably are going to be aware of you. How do you get through?
Quickly, quietly, with cover, concealment, and camouflage. You go in under different pretenses. It's called a pretext. Private investigators use it in this country all the time. You're the pizza guy going to the door. You know what I mean? You're the guy that they would normally see. Who is that? American businessman. You get in that particular way. get in however you can.
Do you have to use subterfuge to get in beyond, you know, the American business? I mean, after all, your face, your identity would be known to certain foreign agencies, right?
I would think so.
Yeah,
if they were any good.
I would think so, too. So what are you saying, that they're not that good?
No, some of them are very good, but they are not as good as me. I sure hope. I mean, that's why I'm still alive.
Okay.
Let me give you an explanation. A lot of times when you go into these particular places, you're coming from an area that's quite friendly.
Right.
You can, let's say you got to go to Cuba. You might come from Florida.
Right.
It's only 90 miles.
Yeah.
That can be done without difficulty. You come in through a scenario that would give you the availability of having that cover and concealment. Come in through the sky. High altitude, low entry.
How really good or bad is the security in most countries? I mean, obviously, start with this one? It varies. Yeah, sure. Start with this one.
We're lousy as far as the airports and things like that.
Yes.
Okay, we're not that good. We want to get great things done, but we don't want to pay anybody. And that sort of thing doesn't warrant a prepared individual who knows what to look for. I was at an airport no more than 3 weeks ago where an 80-year-old lady was basically deflogged. I mean, it was ridiculous. And there were two really swarthy-looking individuals there who I would have stopped, and they got through without even getting checked. Now, what's the problem here?
Yeah, if you do a lot of flying, there are a lot of things you wonder about.
Yeah, and you see these things. You see them on a daily basis. That's scary, considering the amount of things that can come into this country on any given second. Our borders are very porous. And
very long.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. That's a very scary thing to undertake.
Now, how would you compare us to the Israelis?
Israelis are tough, tough, tough. I love them. They're the best.
They're the best.
They don't take any crap from anybody. They will sit your butt down, and they'll keep you there for 10 years if they don't think you should get on that plane. Not only
suppose,
that.
Suppose somebody comes to you with X numbers of millions of dollars and asks you to go get an Israeli out of Damascus.
They're not going to be there.
I beg your pardon?
They would never survive.
The Israeli would never survive?
No. Sadly enough, the Israelis are a marked people. You can pretty much tell an Israeli, I mean, if he's undercover, chances are he might be able to infiltrate somewhere in the Palestinian area, but that's still very close. The odds are you could not get an Israeli out. He'd be dead.
So that would be something you would decline?
No, I wouldn't decline it. I would take an educated guess and say that that particular individual is not going to be alive at the time that I would try to extract him.
You believe in God?
Oh, yeah. I believe in...
The devil?
Yes. Absolutely. He tries to work through me all the time.
Then you believe in life after death, right?
I believe in life after death. I also believe in reincarnation.
In reincarnation, really?
There's no way that I could have built up all this stuff that I have in my mind and in my soul and in my spirit without having many lifetimes to build upon.
There's got to be a big part of you that likes aspects of what you do, or you wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or it's either that, or you just do it for the money.
No.
I mean, there's got to be a deeper seated reason in your psyche why you do this stuff. You ever
get off on it?
You get off on it. Well, that's straight out.
That's for sure. I could not be an accountant working 9 to 5. One, I couldn't get up at 9 in the morning. That's when I go to bed. I couldn't sit behind a desk. I've tried it. I've done it. It's not.
Not you.
No, my purpose in life that God has given me is to help the people that can't be helped and to die trying.
That's a really thin line that you walk, though. And as I mentioned earlier, you're more or less a mercenary, and I mean, have there been times that you have been fooled? Somebody presents you with a project to go get somebody who does deserve to be in jail. I mean, I'm sure they put a good story, a good wrapping on it for you. If they think you need that to proceed.
Well, the nice thing about it is most people don't know me at all when they meet me, so that they don't know what is perceived and not perceived.
How do you handle contact with these clients? Is it by
telephone? Very carefully. No, it's not by telephone. As certain recent occurrences have proved, the telephone is not exactly the safest mode of information transfer, especially since that it can be traced.
What is safe?
Face-to-face contact, whether they know it's you or not. That remains to be seen. You get a hold of them.
You ever been double-crossed?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
How so?
You usually find it, you don't so much find it with the client because you do enough early recon to be able to figure out if they're genuine or not. Plus, you'd be surprised, the people that aren't genuine are the ones that don't want to give the money up front.
Huh.
If somebody is in dire need of your help, they don't have a problem with putting money down on the table to show that they're sincere.
Yep, if they've got it, that's right.
Even if they don't.
Even if they don't.
They get it.
They find it somehow, huh?
That's the biggest deciding factor, if they can get the money. Not that if I wouldn't take it if they couldn't get the money, because there have been times where I've worked on very little.
Well, that's almost pro bono.
It is pro bono, and like I said, I don't do pro bono unless extreme circumstances are in play, and I haven't encountered many of them.
How many people do you have that you could reliably, right this second, for example, pick up? I guess I shouldn't say pick up the phone. Contact in whatever way you contact them, and say, "Look, we're on for the following."
I contact 3 to 4 major people, and each one of them have 1 or 2 people to contact, and then you get your team, and that's how you deal with
it. Do you train
all the time
for the specific operation coming up?
There is a multi-tiered aspect to it. You're always training. I train every day, all day, constantly.
Yeah, still, but there are details in any specific operation.
Once you figure out the logistics and geographics of it, and then you get everything into play, you can then go on to sort of figure out exactly what sort of situation-specific intricacies that you need to train on. If there's a particular house that you're going into, what the map of a prison might be like, things like that.
Have you got enough money to retire for the rest of your life right now if you want to?
No.
No?
No.
That's kind of surprising. For the number of operations you've been on and the amount of money's involved, that's
an interesting...
There's
a lot to retire these days.
Well, it takes a lot, but that's still an interesting answer. What have you done with your money?
I squander it religiously.
You do?
Sadly enough, you'll find that when you can make money at such a ridiculous clip like I can sometimes...
Easy come, easy go?
You got it.
So what do? Tend to gamble? Women?
No. I do not gamble. I don't drink alcohol. I don't smoke. Nothing like that. No drugs. I give it away.
You give away money?
I help people that need it. I took care of my family.
So now on top of everything else, you're Robin Hood.
Yeah, Robin Hood, Prince of Stupid.
Prince of Stupid. Well, all right, Prince of Stupid, Gabriel, hold on. When we come back, we are going to open the lines, and this is going to be extremely interesting. I mean, really interesting. I'm Art Bell. You're in the place where you can expect anything. This is Coast to Coast AM.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
A night with Gabriel, actually. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. It's all for you to decide for yourselves with respect to what you're hearing. And I'm doing that myself as I'm listening, learning all of this for the first time right along with you and sort of balancing it all in my mind. I know for sure there are people who do what Gabriel says he does. There's no question about it. These people exist. Whether he's one of them or not, I guess you're making up your mind as we go. And it's a very interesting program. I've always wished for diversity on this program, and this is certainly no disappointment.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night. But you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. Listen on your way to work and again on the way home. Or listen to one of over 1,000 archived shows from the past 3 years. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You'll sleep like a baby, knowing you'll never miss your favorite guests and topics ever again. Remember, a one-year subscription comes out to only 15 cents a day. Sign up today at coasttocoastam.com.
Coast to Coast AM. It's way out there.
These groups of extraterrestrials that are unfriendly, many of which are hiding down there at the bottom of the ocean, why don't they want us to know about this?
We've lost people in wars with UFOs. You know, we spend a lot of time honoring our heroes, and we have heroes that we don't know about. It's disturbing to that extent because we have a debt to people who defended us, and we'll never know who they are.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
All right, I'm about to open the phone lines, Gabriel.
A moment of truth.
Yeah, what do you think you're going to get?
Oh, I'm going to get a lot of interesting calls. I'm sure I'm going to get skeptics.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep, you're going to get skeptics, I'm sure of it.
But like I said, the point is not so much the skeptic, try and prove the skeptics. I mean, I go out and prove it to myself every day, so that's, you have to be stable enough within yourself to be able to accept people coming at you because of what they don't understand. But the interesting thing is, in my line of work, you have that shield of anonymity and the cloak of obscurity around you, and I'm kind of opening myself up, so.
Well, actually, here comes it. Look, here, Mark, in Sydney, Australia, I get these questions, you know, on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
So all the way from Sydney, Australia, he says, does Gabriel trust the telephone he's using right now to talk to you?
No. Not as far as I can throw it, and I can heave it an awful distance.
So telephones are, in terms of security,
telephones are bad.
Not worth a damn. So
no, not at all. They can triangulate your appropriate location wherever you might be on a telephone.
After you've done these operations, Gabriel, there's got to be people out there in different parts of the world that would love to skin you alive. Right?
Sure. And then eat me afterwards.
All right. I promise to go to the lines. I've got to do that.
So let's
rock. First-time caller line, you are on the air with a man who calls himself Gabriel.
My God, this has got to be the most interesting guest ever on talk radio.
Well,
I've got to admit, yeah, I did you so far this time.
Sir?
Hey, it's Rob from North Hollywood. As I just said, it's great. So, you know, it's really hard to prove either way, but I've been around some military personnel and some, you know, people who like to talk about stuff. He's used a lot of keywords that I've heard. I don't know of anything, but really, you might laugh at this. You might think, well, I'll get sued, or, I mean, you know, you'll get sued if you take up my proposition here.
Please don't get me sued.
I was thinking, look at this. This guy, apparently, he knows what he's doing. He has connections, right? Our military right now, I don't know what's wrong, but our military is no much going to get Bin Laden than Saddam, than we are to get Saddam Hussein. I think you have millions of listeners. If we sent you money, our bill, you know, at least $10, I'll give $100 of my own money. If you put it in a bank or something, and we got at least $500,000 or $600,000 to give to this guy to get Bin Laden's head in a jar.
Don't you put me in the middle of this.
I'll tell you what, that's true patriotism.
Imagine how popular you'd be, Art, if we could get Bin Laden's head in a jar. You know, then we could put it in the, when anybody walks in the Pentagon, they'll see it. And you'll all be, you know, us, the listeners of Art Bell, we paid this guy to get Bin Laden.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully he's the right guy. You know, I heard that the people who attacked us were pretty much from Egypt a lot, but they think it's Bin Laden. So just
many of them were from Egypt.
And Saudis, too.
The Saudis are scum, too. Sorry. I may be a polite individual, but I'm not exactly politically correct.
You're not even close. So you're saying Saudis are scum. You mean all Saudis?
No, not all Saudis.
Okay.
The Saudi people are a wonderful, warm people, and I know them personally. I have done high risk protection work for some families in Saudi Arabia, so I know intimately the Saudi people. Leadership are a pain in the ass.
All right. The leadership is a pain in the ass. You know what? You're right about that. They are. And actually, the American people don't know a lot about it because they're not told. But the Saudi leadership more or less hates our guts. Now,
they do.
On the surface, they, you know, they're selling us oil and they're doing business with us. But they really hate our guts. That's the truth. And the truth might hurt. And I know Washington smooths it over. But the fact of the matter is the Saudis don't much want us over there at all. And don't like our presence, don't like our women, don't like anything about us.
Not a bit.
That's the truth. Wild card line, you're on the air with Gabriel.
How are you this evening?
Okay, sir.
Very well, sir.
Yes, my name is Ponch, and I'm in Houston, and all I can say is to help validate your point, Gabriel, the things that you're talking about in my mind are more true and more true. And the last conversation you had is the political people, your hierarchy. My sister in 1990 was part of a group of professional photo people here that you would maybe see your name on billboards.
Mm-hmm.
And a high group of people were taken to Japan on a big contract.
Yes.
The problem was, once she got there, it ended up into a sex slave ring.
I am very familiar with that particular
case.
Maybe not your sister, but
you're familiar with what I'm talking about.
Oh, absolutely. And
we had to extricate her out.
Yes. And I have actually done operations because of those, just the exact thing that you've talked
about.
So
what I'm trying to say is the political knowledge that our family had, and maybe with the contact of someone that you do, is more than just finding somebody with courage or patriotism or wants a dollar to go in. This is really a sophisticated thing through it, because you're talking a hierarchy in Japan that got to somebody that got to somebody else, and it's really, and you know, I felt sorry for the people that we couldn't get out.
Yes.
Because I could only get out my sister.
Well, there's always, sadly, you're always going to leave somebody behind.
And secondly, I was just sitting here thinking, you know, maybe what had happened to you to stop you from doing something in the future, maybe from something in the past, because maybe talking to someone like me over something that could be or would be, or, you know, just...
You mean a potential?
Right.
Potential operation, something like that nature?
Right. Maybe you know something that you don't even know you know, but somebody knows that you know it.
There's a damn good possibility of that. You could have hit the nail right on the head, and I just don't know. I mean, the events that transpired for me in the last 48 hours took me completely by surprise. Completely by surprise.
Because of my involvement, like that I had with my sisters, with someone like you,
mm-hmm.
people know of that involvement in it, and it's a small circle. And I can honestly say, after that happened, a couple of years later, I had an episode happen, and I get a phone call from someone, and they need some help.
Exactly, and that's how my
it was just a product procurement of a this and a this and a this and a this and a this.
It's the story of my life, sir.
And then I just hear all of a sudden who's involved. I say, oh, yeah, I know this guy from way, way back, way, way back. And the next thing you know...
Yeah, you're involved.
You're involved.
Okay, I get the picture. And, you know, I understand also what this man is saying. A lot of Americans don't understand what's going on in Japan. There's an incredibly large amount of money. There's a large Japanese mafia. There is a gigantic sex trade in American and Western women in Japan.
Oh yeah, they love them.
That's right. That really is true. Now there are a lot of American women over there that are just voluntarily making money, dancing topless, that kind of thing.
Obviously, yes.
In Tokyo, but there's also the actual slave sex trade, isn't there?
Yes, they keep them in extremely close conditions, awful. Like dungeon sort of conditions, and they let them out to service their potential clients wherever they might be.
Yeah, yeah, I really am aware of that, and you have been involved in operation
yes.
in that. Oh,
absolutely, and that's one of those things that I take pride in doing.
You know, that's tough stuff because again, in Japan. You'd stick out like a sore thumb. Any American in Japan sticks out like a sore thumb. And you start approaching areas where women are kept in slavery like that, and you're in immediate, absolute, life-threatening danger.
Yes. Yes, sir.
So,
that would definitely be the case.
So how would you get a girl out?
You strike hard, you strike fast, and you strike at night.
Hard, fast, and at night, and you just take out whoever's in your way to get
everybody.
To get to her, and that's it. You take it out, take out everybody in the
path. Everybody that you can. I mean, there's no reason to leave somebody behind if you can't, but you can't take everybody. It's an impossibility. I wish I could. I mean,
yeah, I understand. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gabriel. Hello.
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 How are you?
Hi.
Sir?
Listen, Gabriel, I have a question for you, and I know this may seem a little bit off the wall, and initially I know that you haven't been in this business long enough to know the answer specifically to this, but like in my case, I'm an accountant, and
okay.
I've picked up a lot of analytical skills from doing auditing and things like that, and that applies across the board to other things then.
You'd be surprised. The ability to track a paper trail is one of my most reliable assets.
Well, then I think you may have some pretty good insights as to what I'm going to ask you.
Yes, sir.
All right. Vince Foster.
Okay.
I want to know what you think about the way he was killed, who or what group it was that may have been the contractor on that, and who might have contracted that.
Now, Vince Foster, so much strange about the Vince Foster death. You know, the gun was a compilation of different guns. There were a lot of things wrong with the way the death was death scene laid out. There were just a whole lot of things wrong.
I remember the gun was put together from separate pieces.
That's right. It was a compilation of other guns. It was.
All right, let me explain why that was. A lot of times when you are doing that sort of operation, You have one particular piece of firearm that has a traceable serial number, and you have to replace that particular piece with other pieces. The reason for that is obviously the traceability factor. Now, as far as I'm not very specific with the details other than the gun. I know that the gun was a bunch of different pieces put together. Normally, if I were to do a job, it would be your armament would be stock. That's just the way I like to
work. Well, I'm sure he wanted you to answer who killed Vince Foster and probably, you know, who was on the grassy knoll and whatever else you could tell us, but there's no reason why you would know that necessarily, is there?
Well, as far as the grassy knoll, no, I do not know who killed Vince Foster. I would never have, I don't even have the foggiest. I know it wasn't me.
There you go.
Yes.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gabrielle. Hello.
Hi, this is Chris from Cottonwood. I'm listening on a skip from Bakersfield, KNZR.
Okay.
My question is, do you plan on having a family when you retire?
No.
And do... Oh.
Really?
No.
No?
The next question would be...
Well, wait a minute. Hold on to your next question. Why not?
It's not in my projection.
Hmm.
Never to have a family.
No. I'm going to drift off into obscurity. Maybe be a warrior monk in China somewhere.
Oh.
Next question, caller?
Oh.
Even bad weather messed you up, didn't it?
It was all part of the one thing.
Let me tell you why. It just doesn't seem to be in the cards for me.
Yeah.
In other words, there's something in your, I don't know, in your psyche that would allow you to do what you do that wouldn't let you get that tied down ever?
No, I wouldn't. I would never get that tied down. I love kids. I think kids are just the most pure, beautiful things in the world. And, I wouldn't have a child and I wouldn't have a family because I know what the world really is. I know what it's coming to. I know how it's funneling out of control or spiraling out of control as we speak, and I would never want to bring a new child or a new life into that world. Many people here as it is.
We do have a lot of people, don't we?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not one of those things where I would love to say, oh, we...
Do you think that evil in the world, Gabriel, is increasing?
Yes, exponentially.
Why do you think that is?
Observation.
No. I understand your observation, but I mean, why do you think evil is so much on the increase now? What is changing in the world? This is a very abstract question.
You know, well, let me see if I can answer it for you. You know how you talk about the quickening and how things are coming to a more interconnected end.
Yeah, well, everything is quickening. The argument on that one's over.
How can you have events quickening without things like good and evil quickening and increasing?
So you think both good and evil are increasing?
Mm-hmm. I think it's occurring in an exponential fashion.
Where do you think it's all going?
Straight to hell.
Straight to hell.
No, it's. I think it's going to come to a cataclysmic end, honestly. I think we're pushing ourselves so far forward that we're going to go right back to where we started.
Back to where we started from, yeah.
Which could be a good thing in and of itself.
Oh, well, I was talking to a theoretical physicist last night. By the way, how long were you in custody totally?
I listened to a little bit of the show. I was in custody for almost 48 hours. No light, no water.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sitting here with an ice cold jug of water. They dehydrated the heck out of me, which didn't make my ability, my awareness, very good, which is why I took one in the leg.
Okay, well, so they know where you are.
Yeah, they do now.
Right? They know where you are.
Whoever they is.
Whoever they are, they know where you are, and if they want you again and they want to do worse than they did in the last 48 hours.
Come and get me.
Come and get you? You're not afraid. In other words,
why should I be afraid?
Death? Dismemberment? Come to mind?
I've already dealt with dismemberment. I've been shot, I've been stabbed, I've been drug along the ground, I've been beaten up by multiple people. I mean, I'm no invincible human being that can take out the world. I mean, I get scraped up and banged around, and I mean,
So you got a lot of scars.
Yeah, I fought off 3 life-threatening attacks in the past 48 hours. One of them that wounded me, and the other ones, they just gave me a nice headache, and they paid for it, but damn if I didn't come out scathed.
Boy, do we live different lives. Holy mackerel. Most people, I think one of the reasons, Gabriel, that most people are probably saying, oh, come on, this has got to be BS, is because this is so, what you do is so far out of their frame of reference.
That they have no idea what they're
looking at. That it sounds like science fiction. You know, it sounds like a James Bond movie.
James Bond is docile. He gets to mess around with women and gamble all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't get any of that crap. I get to make little tents in the friggin' desert in the middle of the night and sweat during the day and hump 115-pound packs all over the place. It's not exactly the most fun in the world. But if you like what you do, then you do what you like.
So it's not exactly like the movies, huh?
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
You ever going to write a book or write about your experiences?
I've had so many people come and ask me to write a book about me.
I can imagine, yes. You're not going to do it?
No.
Huh.
What I do for people. I don't do for myself. I mean, I make a living out of it, and I take care of myself.
That's an interesting response, too, from a guy who gives away money. Hold on, we're at the bottom of the hour. This is really something.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. And the reasoning of his latest fame. He talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest, blackest hair, the prettiest green eyes anywhere. And Marie's the name of his latest fame. Though I smiled, the tears inside were a burning. I wished him luck, and then he said goodbye. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Network.
I try and not tell you what to believe. I try and let you figure out what to believe all on your own based on what you're hearing. My guest calls himself Gabriel. The things he does, most of us, even though we watch them on TV and in the movies, when we consider them in actual life, we consider them probably repulsive. Killing, maiming, torturing. To the good sometimes to try and get somebody out. But again, you know, it's all perspective. I mean, one person's hero is definitely another person's terrorist. So it depends on your perspective. Tough work.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 17th, 2002.
One of the, I think I'll just tell you this, one of the people who screened this man in pre-interview for this program was himself in a real serious intelligence agency. I won't say any more about it than that. I'll just tell you that part of the screening process that this man went through included somebody who was himself in an operational sort of unit for a long time. So, for whatever that means. The man's name is Gabriel, and you've been listening to what he does. We're continuing to take calls. And so, Gabriel, here we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gabriel. Hello. Push the button. Now you're on the air, east of the Rockies. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Where are you, sir?
I am smack up against Three Mile Island.
Oh, man.
Three Mile Island.
For you. Yes.
That's okay. The wrong place to be.
Yeah, yeah, definitely is. I was curious. I was wondering if you have ever been approached by maybe a certain individual or organization to perhaps seek out an American politician.
As far as threat elimination?
Yes.
Never.
Okay. I was hoping that didn't come about.
No, I, like I said, I'm a patriot. I love the United States of America. I love our armed forces. I love what our country stands for. It's funny, I was laughing during the commercial break. A friend of mine sent me a T-shirt. I just opened it now because of my interesting set of circumstances in the last couple of days. It says, the Second Amendment, and it ain't about duck hunting.
Exactly.
That's what our country is about. It's about the freedoms that we take for granted because we don't have them in other countries.
Boy, that's the damn truth.
It is.
Thank you very much, caller. Yeah, you travel around the world. That's the one advantage of traveling.
3 Mile Island.
It's a very interesting place. I live very near it. Listen, Max in Tucson, Arizona, asks again a question I really asked you earlier, and that is, why did Gabriel opt to appear on this program tonight? Why are you doing this? You're not selling a book. You're not selling anything, in fact. Well, why are you here?
After the event that happened in Pakistan, after Mr. Pearl was brutally killed, I know brutal, and that was brutal. Mm-hmm. They almost cut his damn head off. Mm-hmm. And that was a situation that could have been prevented with somebody in my line of work helping. He had a bunch of Pakistani bodyguards that didn't give a crap about him, and he died for that. Now, his company, his news agency, had the funding to hire the proper security force, and they didn't do it.
And they didn't do it, huh?
No. And if there's people out there that are considering this sort of thing, you want to go overseas, you better find somebody like me. Don't have to be me. I could care less if it's me or not.
How many U's do you think there are out there?
Not enough. Let me be clear about that. There are plenty of people in the world that will kill you with a moment's notice. Plenty.
Yeah, people are killed, you know, in our cities. They're killed for, you know,
for
20
nothing.
Bucks, 40 bucks, nothing. I mean...
Hopefully, maybe I can get the word out that the people cannot be, you shouldn't be a victim. I grew up with it ingrained in my head that the victim status is something that is just not, shouldn't be tolerated. And maybe if some people out there, they don't have to become what I am, but maybe if they get a hint or a clue, who knows?
So the people, the conservatives who say, you know, things like, let's see, what is one of the great sayings? That the unarmed man is a subject. And
the unarmed man is a subject.
Yeah. And that's how truly, ultimately, totally important the Second Amendment is. They didn't mean it to mean anything other than what it does, and that is you have the absolute right individually to protect your own life and that of your family.
Life, liberty, and property.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gabriel. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Well, I'm pretty good for an old man. I've been living with distrust of our government in some ways 58 years of my life. I'm one of those that know that there are extraterrestrials. I've seen flying saucers back in 47. And recently in my investigations, I'm finding that there's a complete underground portion of our government, not even elected. And I don't know how to get the word out to the people. I've got a month or a weekly internet show that I started about 6 weeks ago pertaining to what I know. I'm one of two people still alive here at Pendleton, Oregon that's seen flying saucers in 47. I put a book out last year which doesn't seem to be taking locally. So I got frustrated and went worldwide on the internet. I'm totally blind and I'm 67 years old and I'm very angry with the cover-up.
So really, your question involves the entire underground government.
Yeah, I find that there is an underground basis.
Let me ask you a question, sir. Is your particular life in jeopardy at this time?
I don't know.
Well, have you had...
I haven't had any. I went public on the radio on the 22nd of this month. Also, a year ago, I put the book together over the number of people that have come forward to me right here locally within 40 miles of Pendleton with their information, their stories, their abductions. And it's quite interesting to find out that there are so many people, but they're afraid to say anything unless they talk to me.
All right. Well, let me let me modify this.
You know,
this.
I know what you mean by that.
But let me take his question, change it a little bit. There are many, many Americans who believe, even though we've got the best government, and I'm totally behind that. We do, but there are many Americans, Gabriel, who believe that there's a power structure beneath and aside from and separate from the elected officials we know that operate outside, totally outside the bounds, even within this country, of every civil right you think you have, a total underground government that exercises its own justice for its own goals, whatever people believe those to be. Do you think there is such an operational reality in this country?
Yes.
You do?
Do I think that they're working against our greater good? No. I believe that these individuals, whatever you want to call it, he has a certain fundamental humanity that they have to live by. People can be evil people, but you don't want to take all the air out of the world or else you can't breathe yourself. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's the same sort of logic. They're not going to go against fundamentally what they know to be, unless something else is a greater motivating factor in that.
That was a really good line. You don't want to say it again. You don't want to take the air away.
You don't want to take the air away from the world, because then you wouldn't be able to breathe anymore.
Yourself.
Exactly.
So in other words, you've got to have some.
There's some common denominator.
I'm with you there. Sure.
There's always some common denominator. As evil as you think people are, or as anybody might think people are, there is a common denominator that's going to drive that.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, a first-time caller line, you're on the air with Gabriel. Hello.
Hi, my name is Derek. I'm calling from Thousand Oaks, California.
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir?
Hi. Listen, I've been listening, rather interesting guest. He's very articulate and knows a lot of buzzwords and so on, but I have a military background that's fairly specialized, and I do have some background in advanced marksmanship.
Fantastic.
Yeah, now...
That's not where mine is.
Well, we'll find out, because I'm hoping that I can sort of resolve in my mind the extent to which you're being truthful about all this by just simply talking shop with you for a minute.
Sure.
You mentioned that... you have some specialized sniping background or some training that you received in the private sector. I thought you had made a mention about operating a 308 rifle at 1,000 yards.
A 308 bolt, yeah. It's
Can you tell me what bullet weight you would use at that? Let me start off an even more obvious point. Anyone trained in the discipline of sniping can tell me in an instant what the bullet drop is going to be for their bullet, say 168 grain match, boat tail, 400 yards. If you can tell me
If I'm using PMC ammo, it's going to be...
Well, if you're sitting there with a box of PMC ammo looking at the information...
No, I wish I had one.
Why don't you tell me instantly? You just were down in South America or Central America taking pot shots at bad guys. What was your hold at 400 yards or 400 meters?
I zeroed out and...
No, not zeroed. What was your hold? You're going to obviously... Well, why don't you tell me what your normal zero is and you can tell me what your hold is.
Well, my normal zero, what yardage, sir?
What? Why don't you tell me? What do you zero it in for? You're a sniper trainer.
I zero it in first at between 350 and 5.
So you don't zero a rifle in for a range. Any sniper-trained person knows you zero a rifle at a specific distance.
Yes.
Or
zero it from 50, 100, 150, 200, 350, 500, 850, and then 1,000.
Sir, you're not sniper-trained.
Really?
Why don't you tell me what the wind deflection would be at 400 yards with a 10-mile-an-hour wind? The most basic question that you have to be able to answer in any sniping advanced marksmanship situation.
Mm-hmm.
What is the wind deflection of a 168-grain bullet or a typical match load? You said you use PMC ammunition, which is of generally such poor quality that I can't even imagine why anybody would use that for a sniping application. But maybe you could tell me what the 10-mile-an-hour deflection would be. Say again?
It's what you have available.
Okay. Typically, then, you're going to have a 160-plus grain ball ammunition available from various military sources. What would be a 10-mile-an-hour wind, you're sniper-trained? And this is very basic. I'm not hitting you with 20 or 30-mile-an-hour wind.
That 20 or 30-mile-an-hour wind, I wouldn't be shooting, sir.
Well, you can if you're a sniper-trained.
No, listen, you are
Let's address the 10-mile-an-hour wind issue, which is very basic, and you specifically mentioned that you enjoyed doping the wind, that you enjoyed working with the wind at 1,000-yard shots. I'm cutting that by 60%. I'm trying to give you an opportunity trained in this discipline because I am.
All right, slow down.
Please.
Yes, I'll be more than happy to slow down.
Not a problem.
Okay.
You can stop for 1 second.
All right.
All right?
I'll stop him.
Thank you.
He didn't want to stop, so I'll stop.
No, he didn't.
Go ahead.
All right. In a nutshell, I am not the greatest sniper in the world. I don't claim to be. Once you zero out a scope, okay, you can shoot it. If you get around 3 rounds off, you can generally center yourself, okay? My specialty is getting up real close behind somebody and cutting their throat.
Yeah,
sticking a knife in their throat.
Yeah, you made that very clear earlier.
Yes. He didn't want to recognize that. But I will be more than happy on a dark alley some night to show our friend on the other line what I do best.
Wild card line, you're on the air with Gabriel. Hello.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm very good, Gabe. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I was expecting a few toughies. That was one. You got another one for me?
I wanted to tell you that what happened to you in the last 48 hours, I hope it's setting off some bells, but I have another question. I just got back from Colombia.
Yes, sir.
And
what part?
That's
north of South.
At this moment. Right now I do contract work. But I'm retired from a government agency. But I also worked in Brazil 15, 16 years ago training the police.
Oh, really? I know a good portion of the police force outside of the São Paulo area.
Very good. When you were down there, do you have any trouble with the language, speaking Spanish to them?
I speak Spanish very well, except for the fact that they speak Portuguese.
Good answer.
Yeah.
That's about where I wanted to put you, Gabe. Have
yeah,
a good
I know.
Night.
They speak. Yeah, have a good night, sir.
Yep.
All right. Easton Rockies, you're on the air with Gabriel. Hello.
Yes, Art. I just want to say to Gabriel,
yes, sir.
I didn't catch all the program, but what I've heard thus far, all I wish is the best of luck to you, sir, and thank you for your endeavor and what you are doing.
I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. First time caller line, you're on the air with Gabriel. Good morning.
Hi there. How's it going?
Okay. Where are you?
Well, I'm from San Francisco, California.
San Fran. All right.
Dangerous area right now with the earthquakes.
I'm not going to stay here that long, and then I bump into Texas.
Nevada's going to become waterfront property soon.
Yeah, I heard about that. What I simply really wanted to say, first, my God, that guy, obviously, when he just called you, obviously had it in for you before.
Well, let me go so far as to say that he knows a lot about sniping. That's great.
Sure.
I'm happy for him.
Yeah, and the first thing you said, of course, was that was not what you did, your favorite thing.
I have done it.
You laid that down very early in the show, actually.
Yeah, exactly. I personally wanted to say that, with our other dangers that are going on, with the government are trying to hide from us with this terrorism stuff and the shadow government doing what they think, I suppose, I would like to think, is best for us, and all this other stuff we don't know that's going on, but some of us that do and have connections to the underground and know what's up, and it's really the people like you, and for all the skeptics out there, people that are like you, if they don't think it's you,
which is fine,
that you guys are the protectors, you're the other heroes of America. You guys are the fighters, the ultimate fighters of freedom. You put your lives on the line, and you have to do what's necessary. And what you do is no different from what our own government does.
Well, that's sure probably true. All right, listen, ma'am, I've got to run. We're almost out of time. Thank you very much for the call. Let's try one more.
Mm-hmm.
A wild card line, you're on the air with Gabriel. Hello.
Hi, Gabriel.
How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I've got a question, actually concerning Bangladesh.
It's so funny that you mentioned that. That is the most impoverished area on Earth at this particular time.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you answer me? Is the government there and the police officials, are they considered part of the actual, politician government?
Clarify your question, please.
Okay, as far as, my understanding is, the chief of their police is actually considered an official government as our governors are.
All right, well, I think where she's going here is, yes, in many countries...
Yes, that is the case. It's also the case in Colombia and many South American countries.
The police are a direct arm of political
government.
Will.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Be one
and
way enforce to enforce them. So... Hey, Gabriel, the show's coming to an end. I hope your career isn't, or maybe I should be hoping your career is, and that you get to go fishing, or, what are you, you're just going to, go off into a cabin somewhere and...
play some really cool Miles Davis albums.
Yeah? That's how you want to end it up, huh?
Yeah, you got it. Absolutely. Either that or in some Chinese temple somewhere off in the distance.
Only trouble is... You're probably going to need you're going to need some money to do that. I mean, everything, you better than anybody, even though you might give it away, things cost money.
Well, if there's somebody out there...
Privacy costs money.
That's absolutely true, sir. If there's somebody out there that is in the kind of trouble that they know that I can get them out of, they know I exist.
You're saying what? There's a way to find you? There's going to be a way to find you if they want to?
Where there's a will, there's a way, sir.
Huh. Sure has been an interesting interview, Gabriel.
I wish you the best of health and many years of incredible radio.
Well, the same to you, short of the radio part. The very same to you, Gabriel. It's probably unlikely, but I wish you the same.
I hope to be in touch with you at some point in the future.
Good night, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Well, I don't know. You all can make up your own minds. That was really interesting, wasn't it? Anyway, that's the week from the high desert. I'm Art Bell. Temperature normal. Feeling so much better. You have no idea how great it is to be here. And I mean here. Good night.